Shippensburg.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness, and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Again, we are live in the, well, in the capital of Wisconsin on the front lines of the class war. And today, tens of thousands of people marching in the streets, chanting, having their voices heard. I'm told the governor is still in his office, won't come out because the people are waiting for him. You know, they want to have their voices heard. They want to look at the end of it. This is their state. He does their bidding, and they want to let him know they're not all that happy with this assault on workers' rights and this assault on collective bargaining. And his approval ratings are showing it. Last night we said about 38%. I've seen 41. I've seen a little higher. But at the end of it, here's a guy whose approval ratings, not more than a month or so into his rule, plummeting. So interesting stuff and lessons for governors across the state. And I hope that our governor, Tom Corbett, is paying attention here. Because what I think is important, and we've gotten some contacts from folks who are saying, thank you for going out there and doing this, because this is what Pennsylvania needs to see. This is what the people of the state of Pennsylvania need to see, because if and when the attacks come here, if and when they come, we need to know how to respond. We need to know how to rise up and have our voices heard. So you ask the question, well, Rick, why'd you drive over 800 miles to get to Wisconsin? Why is it important? It's important because this is the first place they decided they thought they had the power to ram through their, well, to ram through their ideology, to ram through their final, that final crown jewel, that mastery of their grand plan. This was it. This was supposed to go through without a song. The Democrats were supposed to do what Democrats do, and that's cave and, you know, just go along and mumble and grumble, but, you know, not put up a united front, not put up a defense, just go along with it and say, well, you know, it happens. But these Democrats didn't. These 14 did not. And you know what? In other states, they're paying attention. In Indiana, for instance, there are people who've gone to their capital having a sit-in, and their Democrats left the state for Illinois. Now, Democrats in Pennsylvania, you need to listen up. You need to figure out how it is you're going to come together and how you're going to put up a united front. Because, and look, I understand, almost no opposition is available. But you have to make a united front. You cannot let them steamroll you. Now, I know there are several right-to-work bills pending. There are some letters going around For sponsorship, you gotta fight that stuff back, man. Now, coming back here to Wisconsin, things are getting a little weird. The people, very peaceful, family-oriented, very, very festive type occasion, but a massive police presence today. In fact, so much so that I began to question if today was the day that the riot gear come out and the sticks start swinging. There were that many policemen here today, Jake. And I got to be honest, you look at this, and it's one of those things that you got to have that in the back of your mind. While the cops are with you, and their union doesn't want this to go through either. At the end of the day, like they said last night, we're going to do what we have to do.
Well, I have to say, I was amazed. I was at the rally, and I just left about an hour ago in the Capitol. And as I was entering, after the rally outside, a policeman actually asked me, "How are you tonight, sir?" Now, how many times do you see that? I mean, I've watched these policemen and these Capitol Police, and that they have really been super restrained. I have to say that. Now, will there come a time when they have to do their job? Perhaps, but here's the thing. As long as these protesters stay peaceful, the public will stay on their side, and that's important. I got to say one thing else, Rick. I mean, I'm amazed every day I go there. You think sometime they'd lose their energy? Oh, my God. You just have to be inside that Capitol. It's almost like, and I'm not exaggerating when I say it, it's almost like a religious experience. You get caught up in this energy and this utter determination that they are going to stay the course today, tomorrow, and as long as it takes. And you know what? I do believe what they're doing here today. These are historic times, and I do believe there's other governors and other legislators watching this closely. That's why it's so, so important that we win this fight.
Well, at the end of this, you look at a couple of states around the country, and you look at Indiana, who, Mitch Daniels has said, maybe Republicans should drop the right to work bill. Maybe we should, let the Indiana House, just let it go, because the Democrats left. Everything's at a standstill. So Daniels told reporters this afternoon that, he expects the House Democrats to come back to work if the bill dies. So if there's some agreement that the Republicans will not pursue this, the Democrats will come back. Because, look, at the end of the day, this is not about balancing budgets. This is not about figuring out how to make ends meet. This is about destroying your political enemy. This is about destroying workers' rights. And you look in Florida, Rick Scott, another extreme Republican, way out on the fringe. He told a radio station today, they said, "My belief is as long as people know what they're doing, collective bargaining is fine." So he's staying out of it. And I got to be honest, there's nobody farther to the right than Rick Scott. So, again, you go back to this, and this is why this is important. You got Daniels in Indiana, which I got to tell you, I really thought Indiana was done. I thought there was no chance that it could be stopped. It's been stopped. I thought Florida for sure would be going after this. They've kind of backed out of it. Now, Ohio's just nuts, and they're going forth, and they're locking people out who disagree. They're doing a lot of the strong-arm tactics that you would expect. I mean, even here, if you will, some of the weird stuff's been going on. And the Democratic Party here in Wisconsin did something that the Democrats really aren't known for. And that was stand up for themselves and their constituents. Maybe grow a spine just a little bit. Turns out, as I reported last night on the program, the internet had been turned off. Some were able to get on for a while later, but the website defendwisconsin.org had been blocked. Pretty much it had been blocked all day Monday and Tuesday. Now, the teacher's assistants from the University of Wisconsin-Madison, they created this website, defendwisconsin.org, so they could get information out to people so that you needed volunteers, you knew where things that had to be done. They closed that off, and one person told me they used the anti-pornography stuff to block it. So these people's freedom of speech being blocked under the guise of, there's pornography on there. So you got to wonder about that. But, at the end of this, Republicans have They thought they had it. They thought they could reach. And fortunately, Democrats have stood up and said, you know what? We are going to fight back, and we're going to do something that Dick Cheney never thought we could, which was grow a spine. And again, I'm telling you, you look at Indiana, you look at Florida. There's an opportunity here to beat this back here. And if we can beat it back here, if the folks here in Wisconsin can stand up and fight this back, I'm saying we probably aren't going to have to do it in Pennsylvania. It'll probably be done for us, because Tom Corbett's going to look at the political tea leaves and go, do I really want to awaken the sleeping giant? Do I really want organized labor and all the working people of the state rallying against me in my backyard? And I think the answer is no. Here's the reality. USA Today did a poll yesterday, and it says the public strongly opposes laws taking away collective bargaining. The poll found 61% would oppose a law in their state like the one here in Wisconsin, compared to 33% who would favor it. So, you know, you see all these bizarre polls all over. This was actually a scientific done poll. They went out and they did it like all other polls. The online stuff, it's who can rally their base to get out and click on the thing. But this was actually taken Monday night. And I look at the reality, the key results, 71% of the folks there, they're opposed to increasing sales taxes or other income taxes to help balance budgets. 53% said that they oppose reducing pay or benefits for government workers. I got to be honest, I'm not in favor of reducing their pay. They have seen their pay reduced enough. Why don't we start looking at some of the... While we were at lunch today, we heard a thing on the news that said the average stock is held for only 7 seconds. 7 seconds. That's how long the average stock trade is held. Think about that. The stock market is no longer a place where you go to invest your money in a company that you want to see succeed. It's a place where you go to gamble. It's a place where you go to put a couple of bucks down on the table and, woohoo, I'm going to be rich. When the reality of it is, you're the one getting shafted. I say you need to slow some of that down by putting a very reasonable, very small transaction tax on it. It would generate billions of dollars and not hurt the investor class at all. In fact, they wouldn't even feel it. And we would hope that they would continue to gamble. It's just like the mafia card games, taking your VIG right off the top. This is, if you're going to allow a card game to go on, if you're going to allow the casino to go on, you got to do something for the betterment of society.
Well, the Republicans and Walker's a classic example. He's hiding behind fiscal austerity, but you know what? When you threaten to take away basic workers' rights and then threaten to use the power of the state with the National Guard, you lose public confidence. And I do believe, Rick, you talked about Florida. Florida has been a swing state, and I think the intelligent Republicans down there are saying, "Look, we're losing a lot of the independents. We're even losing a lot of the blue collar Republicans. Long term, it's going to do serious damage if we go to the way of what is happening in Wisconsin." So I think some of these Republicans are really taking notice. They're zeroing in what's happening, and they're saying, no, we don't want to go there. If I can say one other thing, you know, what's happening here is so egregious. I mean, think about basic workers' rights. If you look at the papal insignia, he talks about workers' rights. If you look at the basic founding documents of the UN, they talk about workers' rights to have collective bargaining. International organizations, numerous of them have said that workers' rights are a human right. And yet here we have the governor of a state within the confines of the United States trying to deprive these people of their basic human rights. It is appalling.
I absolutely agree with you. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Micah Urich about the Chicago election. Evidently, Rahm Emanuel has won. He's been called the winner in the election there, in the primary there. We're going to talk to him about that. We're right back after this. I'm taking all our money and shipping it offshore. Do the job you're looking for.
Saving work in America, one show at a time.
The Rick Smith Show. Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Another day, another high-energy protest of thousands at Wisconsin's state capitol in Madison as resistance continues to an attempt to destroy collective bargaining rights for public workers. Solidarity rallies were held in 38 states to protest attacks on collective bargaining rights for public workers, and the Egyptian labor movement has expressed its solidarity with Wisconsin workers. Wisconsin Education Association President Mary Bell.
This is not about pay. This is not about benefits. This is about busting the force of the workers, the voice of the workers in their workplace.
A free Rock for Your Rights concert featuring Tom Morello, Wayne Kramer, and others drew thousands in Madison as protests rang through the city's Capitol Square and echoed off the marble walls inside the Capitol Rotunda Monday night. The 14 Democrats in Wisconsin's Senate held firm, staying away to block a vote on the bill that would strip collective bargaining rights from public workers. Workers are on the march to defend collective bargaining in Ohio's state capitol today as well. Republicans there are also trying to push through legislation ending union rights for state workers. AFSCME's Stacey Benson Taylor.
AFSCME is taking 14 to 15 buses from around the state up to the state house so that we can rally other unions. The transit union, many of the private sector unions are also taking buses up so that we can stand in solidarity against this attack on public employees.
As tens of thousands of protesters continue to make their voices heard in and around the Wisconsin Capitol building in Madison, the city has also become a hotbed of activity for visits from labor leaders. Jesse Russell reports.
On Monday, SEIU President Mary Kay Henry was in town and sat down with Workers Independent News to explain why she feels what's happening in Wisconsin is so very important for the entire country.
This governor has put in the tax cuts for corporations in a situation where corporations are not paying their fair share, and workers just agreed to take 6% wage cuts. And these Republicans and the governors aren't willing to come to the table and think about shared sacrifice.
One of the most iconic images being sent out to the world from the peaceful rallies is the thousands of workers and students that have occupied the Capitol Rotunda for 7 nights straight. Henry described her first impression when she set foot into that space on Monday morning.
An affirmation of what working people believe when we come together, that anything is possible, and that whatever amount of money the opposition may have, it isn't enough to sort of take away our voice.
Doug Cunningham, Workers Independent News. Standing tall against a multinational corporate agenda, The Rick Smith Show.
I got to tell you, there was a time I was hopeful that the Employee Free Choice Act actually had a chance. Turns out the guy who single-handedly killed the Employee Free Choice Act, I guess he's just been named the winner of the Democratic primary in Chicago. So Mayor Rahm, I guess, is what's going to happen. Man. Wow. I cannot explain how. How distraught I am right now. I got Micah Urich on the phone. He's in Chicago right now. Micah, thanks for taking time for me.
No problem, Rick.
Oh man, just when I thought labor's fortunes were looking up, that we were actually seeing Democrats coming to the defense of working people. Now one of the, in my opinion, one of the most pro-business Democrats there are going to be the mayor of a major city.
Yeah, you know, those of us who are in Chicago are not real surprised by this. It's been long known that even the media long ago declared him the winner of this race. And, you know, I just pulled up the numbers on the fundraising for the different candidates, and I realized that Rahm had actually out-fundraised his the mayoral candidate who came in second, Gary Chico, by almost five times. It was $10.5 million to $2.3 million. And so I think the big thing to take away from this race is that even among the Democrats, these races are about who's got the most money, and whoever has the most money is going to get the most votes.
And I look at this and I there was a little bit of me who said, you know, he was so closely tied to President Obama, and President Obama's had some problems with Democrats lately, some of the positions he's taken. I thought it might have hurt Emanuel a little bit. Turns out I was wrong.
Yeah, he's blanketed Chicago recently with his ads, and he's been the one who, and it doesn't help that the media sort of declared him the victor. I think one of the real interesting things is that in Chicago, you know, there's a website, Progress Illinois, that recently reported that there's a pact that was formed called For a Better Chicago that was made up entirely of the sort of the city's, it was very secretive, and it was made up, the money in this pact was coming from the city's business elites, and all of that money was going to Rahm. So there's this sort of almost collusion between media declaring him the winner and big business realizing that he was the one who would best carry out their agenda, and so they funneled all their money to him, and, of course, he emerged the victor today.
Yeah, you know, and looking at this, and like I said earlier, the I blame him for single-handedly killing the Employee Free Choice Act. Is he going to be a friend of labor, or will they get a fair shake? What do you think?
I mean, it's been pretty well established so far that Rahm is no friend of labor, certainly not the friend that someone like Miguel Del Valle, who was sort of the progressive choice for mayor in Chicago. I mean, a lot of labor folks had thought that he would be their best friend in the mayoral office here. But Rahm has certainly made it clear that he's not going to be beholden to labor. I mean, the way that a lot of folks would spin it is that Rahm is not beholden to special interests, of course, viewing the labor unions as some sort of special interest, sort of like how it's been covered in Wisconsin from the right-wing media, that, you know, these special interest groups are the ones who are holding Wisconsin, you know, hostage or whatever. And then, and he's very much, even though he's a Democrat, he's portrayed himself that way, that he's going to be, you know, independent. He's not going to be swayed by these labor unions that have held so much sway in the Democratic Party in the past, which is ironic, of course, given how much corporations have donated to this campaign.
Amazing stuff. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Mike Urich. He's a staff writer for the Chicago web magazine, GapersBlock.com. You can get there from our site at TheRickSmithShow.com. We'll have a link there. You know, in looking at going forward, were there any labor unions that endorsed him? Did he get any support from the folks in labor there?
You know, there was a very interesting article in Chicago about how Rahm was giving this really tough talk to unions and sort of announcing some austerity-light provisions that he would push as mayor. Certainly nothing like what's being seen, not the union busting type stuff that's seen in Wisconsin, but talking about, you know, cutting workers' pensions and things like this. And it was very telling that there was an anonymous union leader, a union leader ostensibly of one of the big unions in Chicago, who wouldn't give his name, and he said that he couldn't conscientiously tell his members that they should go out and vote for Rahm, but he felt that he couldn't speak out publicly against Rahm because he knew Rahm was going to win, and he wanted to stay in his good graces. There's that aspect of it. You have these union leaders who are just scared to even speak out against the guy, but they feel like they have to endorse him and they have to not anger him because they could sort of read the writing on the wall beforehand that he was the guy who had collected the most donations from corporations and it's a big business interest, and so they could see that he was going to be the winner.
And they feared retribution.
Exactly. And, you know, before I have to tell one story here, a friend of mine has a wife. His wife is a Chicago public school teacher, and had been recently laid off this summer. And Ron has done this. He didn't show up to a single community, or almost all of the community forums that have been held in Chicago that have been put on by community organizations or other organizations in the city that represented sort of real citizens' interests. He didn't show up to any of them. He sort of deliberately flaunted that everyone would show up to these things but him. But his idea for how he would do your voter outreach was he would show up at the L stations, the train stations here in Chicago, and would do a bunch of handshaking stuff that provided for good photos and stuff. And my friend went out, he was going to one day taking the train to work, and Ron was out shaking hands. And so his wife had just been laid off from a Chicago public school. And they had just bought a house on the city's southwest side, very modest house in a sort of working class neighborhood. And they were really worried about their ability to pay for their mortgage now, because unexpectedly his wife had lost her job as a Chicago public school teacher. So, my friend, his name is Jose, he said, "Hey Rom, you know, my wife just got laid off and we're not really sure how we're gonna get by. And what are you gonna do about this? She's a Chicago public school teacher." And, you know, a normal politician, upon hearing something like this, would sort of give the standard response, you know, "Oh, I'm real sorry to hear that, but we're going to do our best to make sure that you
right.
sort of give something that would
sure.
appease a voter like this." Ron doesn't say a thing about his wife. "Sorry for your wife. Sorry that you all are in this situation now." All he says is, "Well, you know, these teachers' unions—they just—they're just going to have to budge some ground here. They're really not willing to work with us, and they're really just going to have to give up some things. If we're going to get this, you know, our budget's balanced, all this kind of stuff." And, I mean, it's telling that even before he's elected, that Rahm does not even feel the need to give lip service to the folks in the city who are working, who are struggling. He just immediately goes to his talking point, which is busting teachers' unions and, you know, sort of anti-worker stuff and promoting the austerity measures. So I think it's pretty incredible that this is the man who's going to be our mayor.
Let me ask you about the other candidates, because I got an email from Richard who asked me, you know, was he the lesser of the evils? Because we don't know who the candidate. I don't really know much about Chicago politics, but I am kind of disheartened by the fact that that this guy, who again I blame for stopping the Employee Free Choice Act from coming to law, now he's the mayor of a major U.S. city.
You know, elections are not really what I typically cover. I usually cover people's movement stuff. But Miguel Del Valle, who is, I think from the polls so far, it looks like he's coming in third, just about 10% of the vote, had really positioned himself as the progressive choice for progressive Chicagoans. He did an interview where he talked about how he gets up every morning and reads The Nation and Mother Jones, and he had all these great ideas about, getting rid of the coal-fired power plants on the southwest side of Chicago, and had really, a lot of progressives had really gone behind him. But of course, he didn't have a tenth of the money that Rahm had. But also, I mean, in general, out of the entire field, there were six candidates who were on the ballot, I believe. And none of them really put forward a real agenda and put themselves forward very strongly as people who would be on working people's sides. Miguel Del Valle was the closest one to that, but certainly there was no one who was a very dynamic, exciting candidate who folks really felt they could get behind if they wanted to support someone who would support them as working people. And that's part of the problem here. But, you know, like I said, when you have Rahm out fundraising people, you know, by five times or four times as much as the second closest candidate, you understand how these things work. It doesn't matter who, how progressive a candidate would be, how dynamic, exciting a candidate would be, when there's big business money that's at play here, there's no way they can compete.
Yeah, at the end of this, though, the question that I have with this is, you know, how do we get the money out of this? How do we take that kind of that kind of an enormous advantage away? Because again, I don't think it was about the issues. I think I agree with you. It's the money. Who can raise the most money? And to me, that should not be how we choose a mayor or a president or a dog catcher, for that matter.
Clearly, there needs to be some kind of, campaign finance reform on both on the local and the national level, because, I mean, all but the most cynical people would say that our political system right now is completely run by this corporate money, and without any sort of real reform of how these elections get funded, that's not going to change anytime soon.
Because until we do something to get all this corporate money out, it shouldn't surprise anybody that you see people like Scott Walker pulling what he's pulling here in Wisconsin, the talk in Pennsylvania and Ohio and some other states around the country. It's not surprising.
Yeah, and, you know, it's the same in almost every election that we see. Like I said, the local to the national level, and it's not going to change unless that these campaign finance laws change.
Mike, you're rich. I appreciate your time. Staff writer for the Chicago web magazine, GapersBlock.com. We got a link at our site at TheRickSmithShow.com. Mike, always great to talk to you. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Rick, and good work out there in Wisconsin.
I appreciate it. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. This is The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Is that old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous. The salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make history.
We're smart policy. And sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
So you wake up in the morning just to work and fight yourself. And then somebody tells you that you're owned by someone else. Show up, shit, all about.
We've had our heads buried here in Madison, Wisconsin, with the events going on. We've almost forgotten that there's an outside world to help catch us up with what's going on in the real world. What's going on in Washington is our Washington correspondent, Ellen Ratner, from Talk Radio News Service. Ellen, thanks for taking time for me.
Well, thank you.
What's going on?
Too cold out there.
It's a beautiful day today, I thought. Much better than yesterday. So what's going on in the world in Washington, D.C.?
Well, okay. First of all, in terms of Washington, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid said today that basically he wants a 30-day continuing resolution. He wants to freeze it at current spending levels, which he said is actually a cut because it relates to last year's level. Speaker Boehner said, no way. Harry Reid dispatched somebody to talk to Boehner and to negotiate with him. Boehner basically said that the House is going to offer their own 30-day freeze statement and that they are going to put their own short-term continuing resolution. And then Reid went back and said Speaker Boehner should stop drawing lines in the sand and come to the table and find a responsible path to forward that cuts government spending while keeping our commitments to our communities. So there you have the back and forth, and nothing has gotten resolved.
Nothing's gotten resolved, and it looks like the possibility of a shutdown?
Well, you know, it's interesting. The White House was asked about that. They wouldn't say anything. Everybody's saying they hope there's no shutdown today. Jay Carney was asked about a shutdown. He said, actually, the Office of Management and the Budget has had preparations for shutdown since 1980. So it's been many, many presidents, and they get updated, but that basically the shutdowns have been in place, and the government does have a plan.
All right. Well, I hope that happens. Hope they've got a plan, because I think the Republicans, I think they're hell bent for a shutdown.
Well, they may be hell bent for a shutdown, but they must know that it's going to bite them in the back. Yeah. Shutdowns always do.
Yeah, we will see. What's the other story going on right now?
The other major story is this pirate story, and the fact that the United States boarded this with, I think they were using Navy SEALs. They wouldn't exactly say what they were using. And they heard shots. They boarded the aircraft. The president had given them permission to board the aircraft, and they boarded the aircraft. It looked like three of the people were already dead. One was dying, and they tried to save them, and they couldn't. And then they got into a knife fight with one of the pirates and also a gunfight. And two more pirates were killed. 15 were taken back to the United States. And they were also, the ship was boarded by pirates from a mother ship. So they have these mother ships all around the Somali area, the Somali waters, and they're just boarding ships and taking people hostage.
And, you know, again, you go back to the country's in deep, deep poverty. I got to be honest, I don't know what I would do in that situation, but this can't continue.
It certainly cannot continue. The United States has sort of tried to help other countries. The other countries have tried to help the United States. There's almost 700 people who are now being held on various Somali ships and in Somalia.
Amazing, amazing stuff. Let's talk about some other craziness in the world. Colonel Gaddafi at it again. What's going on there?
Well, you know, Gaddafi gave a very rambling talk, and you can listen to it on C-SPAN, and it's actually on their website, and he is, I mean, some was crazy, something like Saturday Night Live the other day, but this was really nuts, and he starts talking about, the situation in Waco, about the situation in China with Tiananmen Square, and say governments sometimes have to do what they have to do to keep people together and countries together. Then he brings out his Green Book, which has all of his laws and says anybody who fights the government will be executed. I mean, he is just crazy. Unfortunately, he's powerful crazy.
And I don't see this ending well, as we've been seeing on TV. This, not good.
Absolutely not good, and it's not going to end well. And although I do think that it will probably end with Gaddafi going, because the area that has the oil is tribally led, and they're saying they're not going to let go of the oil.
Good for them. You know,
we only get 2% of our oil from there. So it's not going to impact. It is not the thing that's driving up our oil prices to $5 a gallon. But with only 2% coming from there.
But that'd be a good reason for them to do it anyway.
That's true, but they can't be blamed for everything. But it's a crazy situation.
It is a crazy situation. Has our State Department done anything? Have they taken any firm action?
Well, there is we do know the Security Council has had meetings. The president is not saying a whole lot, and I think he's actually put it in Hillary Clinton's hand. She's seen it today at 2:30, but we don't have a readout of that meeting.
All righty, Ellen Ratner, I appreciate your time. Talk Radio News Service. We'll see you tomorrow night.
You got it.
You know, I love Ellen Ratner. And that's going to be a new segment that we're going to be adding here to the Rickett Show. Ellen is runs the Talk Radio News Service, going to give us a Washington correspondent. So we're going to be able to keep up on what's going on as it happens there in Washington, D.C. So I'm happy about that. Our Borowitz report for the day. As pro-democracy protests spread around the world, the U.S. State Department today issued the strongest words to date about the situation, offering to stand by whichever side winds up winning. The pro-winning side message articulated today by Secretary of State Hillary Clinton was intended to send a clear signal that the United States is willing to put all of its power and prestige on the line as soon as matters are settled by others. The United States has and will always be a beacon of freedom and democracy, Secretary Clinton said. And in that capacity, we are vigilantly standing on the sidelines and offering the strongest possible monitoring of events from afar. Joining her at the State Department press conference, President Barack Obama echoed her statement, telling reporters, "I am behind Secretary Clinton's mixed message 100%. Dictators who think they can get away with oppressing their people, let me say this," the president said. "The United States of America is standing by thousands of miles away to see how this mess turns out. As for any possible change in policy in the future, Secretary Clinton seemed to rule that out, saying, we will remain consistent in our policy of issuing meaningless statements at random intervals. Secretary Clinton, however, did urge dictators to resist the temptation to pass power onto their sons. Because had that happened in the West Wing, Charlie Sheen would be president right now. So there you go, the Borowitz report. And I love Andy Borowitz. Funny stuff, but not really a funny topic. You look at what the AP reported today. I guess Muammar Gaddafi gave this really bizarre speech, kind of all over the place. But the one thing that he did say, deadly serious, that he would fight to the last drop of blood. And he urged his supporters to go out there and basically go get them, guys. Pretty much saying it's open season. The speech by the Libyan leader, who shouted and pounded his fist from the podium, calling his supporters to go out there and crack some heads. And I look at here in Wisconsin, and I don't think we in this country really understand what it was for the people of Tunisia and Egypt and these people here in Libya. I don't think we get it because, when we go up here to the Capitol here in Madison, it is almost a festive occasion. People are coming out. They're standing up for their rights. There was even a T-Twizzler who was walking around with his big flag trying to cause trouble. I mean, he was doing everything he could possibly do, trying to goad these big hulking laborers and these big hulking tin knockers into any type of conflict. Waving his T flag in their face and nothing. They said, "Hey, go on, bud." That's the amazing kind of country we are, Jake.
Well, I mean, let's be honest, but the worst that'll happen at a rally like this is that you'll get arrested. They'll take you downtown, book you, and you'll be out in maybe a couple hours. But in these other countries, you're exactly right. When they go out and fight in the street, they are literally putting their very lives and futures on the line, and you have to admire these people. How desperate they must be for a better life. Your heart goes out to these people for fighting for what comes down to. They simply want to live a better life and be able to take care of their families like all human beings want to.
Yeah. Senator John Kerry, chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, said today that leaders around the world have to send the strongest of messages. He said, quote, "World leaders must together put Colonel Gaddafi on notice that his cowardly actions will have consequences. The Gaddafi government's use of deadly force against its own people should mean the end of the regime itself." And, I come back to here where we're at. And look, this, at any moment, with the governor giving the word, could turn on a dime, and we could have trouble. Now, none of the people here want that, because I do believe whoever turns to violence first loses. And I know it's not going to be these kids. The kids who have taken over the Capitol, they're sleeping here. It's a festive, and I can't emphasize that enough. That this is almost a festive occasion. They're banging their drums, they're playing music, they're dancing in the hallways. That's what this is about. This isn't about breaking heads. This isn't about the thuggery that the right wants us to believe is going on. There's no chaos here. This is orderly. It's clean. It's polite. Amazing.
And the beautiful thing is they were shouting exactly what we're talking about. This is democracy. This is democracy. This is democracy. And it absolutely is. It's the quintessential expressions of basic human and fundamental constitutional rights. And it's beautiful. I mean, I keep saying it, but I just don't have enough admiration for these people. This is just a beautiful exercise of what America is and hopefully always will be.
Let's take a quick break. We're still having some phone troubles. We're able to take guests, but we don't have the 800 number pointed yet. We're still working on that. If you want to contact me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Love to hear from you. We're right back after this.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Media tycoon Rupert Murdoch bought the Wall Street Journal last year, and in short order, he has turned it into a tongue-clucking sympathizer with and proselytizer for the biggest of big businesses, not only on its editorial pages, but also in its news stories. For example, a recent report on the economic trouble of America's financial giants was so saccharinely sympathetic to the bankers that you could practically see teardrops on the page. The opening paragraph wailed that the banking industry is, quote, racked by the financial crisis and facing slower revenue growth. Nowhere in the story was there even an allusion to the crucial fact that the racking was brought upon the poor bankers, not to mention the rest of us, by, guess who? The bankers themselves. Instead, the Journal wrote admiringly of Wells Fargo, American Express, State Street, and other powerhouses of finance that are nobly struggling, quote, in challenging economic conditions to cut costs and become more efficient. Would this admirable drive for efficiency include any sacrifices in salary, perks, and bonuses of the absurdly pampered top bankers? Holy Gordon Gecko, get real! No, sacrifices for others. As the title of the Journal's article puts it, lenders see little choice, layoffs. And Murdoch's Wall Street Journal is not about to be so rude as to mention that if his banker chums really want to become leaner, they could start by looking in the mirror. Indeed, in deference to the tender sensibilities of Wall Street, the Journal doesn't even refer to the offing of thousands of bank workers as firings. Rather, these people are soullessly termed headcount reductions. This is Jim Hightower saying, in word and in tone, Rupert Murdoch is boiling the journalism out of the once proud news pages of the Journal, reducing the paper's proper name to Wall Street's Journal.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. Don't you know?
Together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show. Progressive talk with a conscience.
While they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. We are here in Madison, Wisconsin, where the class war rages on. People still in the streets, people still making their voices heard, man. And you can have your voice heard, too. This Saturday, Keystone Progress, our good friend Mike Morell over at Keystone Progress, is holding a rally to save the American dream, noon at the state capitol. So hope everyone can get out for that. Again, noon this Saturday, the rally to save the American dream. And we're going to try and get there if we can get back in time. But I invite everyone to come out and support that. Last week, Senator John McCain was on one of these morning radio programs in Tucson, Arizona. And, you know, they're just talking about national issues, talking about other things. And at one point, the issue of Social Security came up. And, you know, the future, its solvency, you know, what the future holds for it. You know, and the host said, you know, there are a lot of things we could do. You know, maybe every month make it a little longer. You know, maybe every year make it a longer month. Maybe raise the cap even. And evidently McCain went ballistic and basically said it's already bankrupt. It's just a big Ponzi scheme that that Bernard Madoff would be proud of. And I look at that and I go, you know, someone like McCain, who all of his life pandered to the seniors, and I look at this man and what a complete look. You know, all the money that supposedly gone, the bankrupt part of this, the money that was borrowed and spent by everyone from Ronald Reagan to H.W. Bush to the little shrub, all that money, you know where it's gone to? Like Alan Simpson said, roads and bridges and building projects and war. All that money just gone. And they don't want to pay it back. And this is, you know, this is exactly what we've been talking about. And now you got McCain trying to lay the groundwork so they're not going to have to pay that back. And we've been telling you this for a while. The answer to Social Security is very simple. This is an easy fix, in my opinion. In fact, it would be a stimulus if we had the guts to do what I've been saying for years to do, which is take the cap off of it, lower the rate to 3 or 4%, tax every bit of income, and that's it. And maybe pay back some of the money that was wasted over the years on Star Wars and on wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and all of this stuff. Maybe that would be a place to start. And you look at this other guy, Representative Huizenga, who has come out and said, Bill Huizenga, Republican from Michigan. He's saying, you know, hey, you know what? Social Security is just fine. Don't worry about it. We could have the conversation about raising the retirement age. We can have that talk. He said, I had somebody at a town hall meeting sort of go after me and about raising the cap and doing all that. And I stopped the guy. And I said, look, I'm 42. I'll be 146 when these recommendations take place. If we want to adopt them right now, it would actually come into place. I'm going to be okay. And again, you know, back to what we were talking about earlier. That's the Republican mantra. I'm going to be okay. Screw you. And that's been the mantra for 30 years. Hooray for me and heck with you. And I don't know if that's the kind of world I want to live in. I'm not so sure about that. You look at what's going on right here at home in Pennsylvania. We've got a governor who's trying to steal, basically trying to steal health care away from working poor people. And it's not even something that comes out of our budget that much. It's money that comes out of the profits that the Blues hold. And they hold a massive amount of money. 3% of their 3% of their holding. That's all it would take to make sure that these folks are insured. But no, privatized Tom doesn't want that.
And you have $42,000 on it. It's a very nominal program that offers bare bones coverage, but it's actually keeping people alive. But what's even worse, you have over 400,000 waiting to get on that list. And wow. And here's the governor with money available. He's delaying, and some people might die again.
Well, look at Arizona.
Just one of those things that are unconscionable.
You look at what's going on in Arizona. Another person added to the transplant list where there's no more money because the governor doesn't want to spend another $1.4 million to make sure that these people are going to live. They're looking at another person, again, another person who's going to die because of our priorities. We can spend all that money going after SB 1070. But, we can't help those poor people. And, again, it goes back to the whole thing about health care. Had we done it right? And, look, I'm not a huge fan of Obamacare. And I say that proudly. I think Obama should be happy. He's the first guy in 100 years of trying to be able to get something passed. But it's a stepping stone. We need to move this forward and quickly to help people in their time of need. Because, look, if you don't have health care, if you don't have health insurance to pay for your illness in your time of need, you cannot possibly be in the middle class in this country. It's just not possible.
No, I think the Republicans are desperate. I think they sense that we're right on the cusp as a nation just accepting that health care has to improve in this country and accepting the change. And once it is accepted, it'll just be like Social Security and Medicare. There's going to be protests. There's going to be efforts by the enemies of those programs. But once it's accepted, some of these politicians, it's going to be their third rail, and they're going to stay away from it. And that's exactly what's going to happen with health care. I really do believe that.
Well, again, you know, you go back to what Kennedy said back in the 60s about his children, you know, about Medicare. You know, you're going to look 30 years down the road and go, gee, how'd we ever live without it? I think that's going to be the position we end up with health care, just once we can get our own radical self-interest taking out of it. At some point, I think that may happen, but it's going to be a long, hard fight. But, you know, I look at what's going on, like, here in Wisconsin. This last election has really damaged our politic. And there's part of me that says maybe this is what we needed. Maybe we needed to see this overreach. Maybe we needed to see their priorities. Because right now, you're seeing them unvarnished. They want to take health care away from poor people. They want to take a voice away from workers. If they're let to continue, how much worse is it going to get? What, you know, I look at Pennsylvania. There are five different right-to-work bills that are circulating. There are probably everything from doing away with prevailing wage to PLAs to everything that benefits communities and working people. They want to strip away, and they want to go back to a system where corporations control even them. And for me, this collective bargaining thing here in Wisconsin, average everyday people should be fighting this. This just isn't a union fight. We're going to go back 50-75 years to the days of patronage, where whoever was in power, those were the people that they handed out thank you jobs to. And it's going to cost taxpayers millions of extra dollars in training process just to get people up to speed to be able to do these jobs. It's common sense on so many levels, but all the street media keeps pumping out. Well, it's these greedy teachers, it's these greedy state workers. They don't want to work with the governor. The governor's got the best attention of mind, blah, 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 blah. No, the reality is this is about stealing rights away from people. And when I saw the Tea Party guy waving his flag today, I'm going, dude, this is what you should be fighting against. This is a tyrannical government who is overreaching. Can you not see that? And his venom, his hatred for organized labor was all he was focused on.
Well, you know, there was a sign at the rally today, and I laughed. It said, Tea Parties are for children, grow up. First of all, you know, when you get past the rhetoric, they most of them really don't know a lot. But beyond that, it's a message, and I concur with it. Look, the adults are in the room. Just get out of the road. You know, this is a time for serious issues.
I love
you
Tea
know,
Party.
Just get out of the road. You know,
I love.
I mean,
Party.
Seriously,
my daughter has her little easy bake oven. She makes little fancy cookies. well, you know, here's the thing. At the end of this, it's going to take all of us in the streets, and we've been saying this for years. What's going on here in Wisconsin is going to go to Ohio. It's going to go to Indiana, where they're sitting in the Capitol right now. And it's going to come to Pennsylvania. Mark my words, this has got to happen. And on Saturday, our friends at Keystone Progress, they're going to have the rally to save the American dream at noon at the Capitol. I encourage everyone to get out there and support this. Well, support the American dream. I'm sure the T-Twizzlers will figure out a reason to be against that, and I would love to see them out there, and because this is what democracy looks like.
I'm sure, and I thought about this.
You're not on. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Kara Slaughter from Wisconsin Farmers Union. Stick around.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
Boston justice! Union justice! Boston justice!
Another day, another high-energy protest of thousands at Wisconsin's state capitol in Madison as resistance continues to an attempt to destroy collective bargaining rights for public workers. Solidarity rallies were held in 38 states to protest attacks on collective bargaining rights for public workers, and the Egyptian labor movement has expressed its solidarity with Wisconsin workers. Wisconsin Education Association President Mary Bell.
This is not about pay. This is not about benefits. This is about busting the force of the workers, the voice of the workers in their workplace.
A free Rock Figure Lights concert featuring Tom Morello, Wayne Kramer, and others drew thousands in Madison as protests rang through the city's Capitol Square and echoed off the marble walls inside the Capitol Rotunda Monday night. The 14 Democrats in Wisconsin's Senate held firm, staying away to block a vote on the bill that would strip collective bargaining rights from public workers. Workers are on the march to defend collective bargaining in Ohio's state capitol today as well. Republicans there are also trying to push through legislation ending union rights for state workers. AFSCME's Stacey Benson Taylor.
AFSCME is taking 14 to 15 buses from around the state up to the state house so that we can rally other unions. The transit union, many of the private sector unions are also taking buses up so that we can stand in solidarity against this attack on public employees.
As tens of thousands of protesters continue to make their voices heard in and around the Wisconsin Capitol building in Madison, the city has also become a hotbed of activity for visits from labor leaders. Jesse Russell reports.
On Monday, SEIU President Mary Kay Henry was in town and sat down with Workers Independent News to explain why she feels what's happening in Wisconsin is so very important for the entire country.
This governor has put in the tax cuts for corporations in a situation where corporations are not paying their fair share, and workers just agreed to take 6% wage cuts. And these Republicans and the governors aren't willing to come to the table and think about shared sacrifice.
One of the most iconic images being sent out to the world from the peaceful rallies is the thousands of workers and students that have occupied the Capitol Rotunda for 7 nights straight. Henry described her first impression when she set foot into that space on Monday morning.
Sort of an affirmation of what working people believe when we come together, that anything is possible, and that whatever amount of money the opposition may have, it isn't enough to sort of take away our voice.
Doug Cunningham, Workers Independent News.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
At some point, I'm going to get tired of that song. I got to tell you, Brett. At some point, the thought of auctioning off all of our state goods, you know, our turnpike, our state wine and spirits shops, the parking garages, everything that our governor wants to, you know, wants to fire sale off to the highest. Well, actually, the lowest bidder, since the economy's in the toilet. That song just makes me angry, Brett. Anyway, for the past few weeks, we've been talking about how our governor wants to take the adult basic program away. You know, that thing that helps ensure that low-income workers can afford just a little bit of security, just a little security at a reasonable cost. Well, he wants to take that away. You know why? He wants to privatize. He's the privatizer. Well, the costs for this program are going to quadruple for these folks. They're already struggling to make ends meet, and now he wants to, you know, make sure that the profits are there. Anyway, I was walking across the street, and I came up to a crowd of people here in Madison. I kept seeing these signs about Badger Care. Turns out, part of this bill to steal workers' rights for collective bargaining also steals health care from low-income workers. You know, wow, talk about a major overreach. That's why I've asked Kara Slaughter. She's with the Wisconsin Farmers Union, WisconsinFarmersUnion.com. We'll put that up at our site at TheRickSmithShow.com if you want to take a look at it. Come talk to us about Badger Care and what's going on. Kara, I appreciate your time.
Thanks so much for inviting me to be here.
You know, I saw this sign, you know, and immediately I thought of what's going on back home in Pennsylvania with our governor trying to steal the adult basic. I'm assuming Badger Care is almost the same thing.
I have to assume so. Badger Care is the state program that covers working adults in Wisconsin, adults or families that have incomes up to 200% of the federal poverty level are covered. That's for now. It's if this bill passes, that will no longer be the case.
They're just going to do away with it?
There are two provisions in the bill that would it's an either-or Faustian bargain. The first option is that the Department of Health Services is directed to ask for a waiver from the federal government to reduce benefits. Under the health care reform, the federal health care reform, there was something called a maintenance of effort provision. You're probably very familiar with that. That provision required that states continue their existing programs at the current levels until at least 2014, when the exchanges could come into effect. The so-called budget repair bill would require the Department of Health Services to seek a waiver to get around that provision. If that waiver is denied, then the eligibility for Wisconsin families would drop to 133%, the bare minimum, the very basement of what the federal government requires in order to participate or give states matching funds for Medicaid.
You know, I look at that, and I've made this argument before for a party, because it looks like the Republicans are doing this across the country, but for a party that claims to believe in personal responsibility and work, helping people who are working be responsible doesn't seem to be very high on their list by making sure that they can't afford to be responsible.
The stories that we have heard from farmers are astounding. One of our members was paying $1,880 per month in health care, and got to the point during the dairy crisis where she had to choose between paying the mortgage and paying for health care. And you know, what's a responsible person to do? You know, do you let your kids go without health care? Do you not pay the mortgage? And what she learned from, by the way, her extension agent, because so many people were calling the Farm Crisis Center and asking for help. So our state extension office was advertising to farmers, this is a program that's available for you. And so she did the responsible thing, which was seek out help. And she said, I had to swallow my pride. I paid taxes as a teacher for 27 years. I never begrudged those taxes. I felt like that was the right thing to do. That's how I was brought up. You pay your taxes for when times get hard for someone else. I never imagined that would be me. And she said, but for the sake of my kids, I had to do that. And now they're covered, and yeah. She said it gives us the security that we can continue farming, we can continue to contribute to the state's economy. And in Wisconsin, by the way, the farm economy is a $59 billion industry, and that economic activity starts on family farms. And we're lucky in Wisconsin that we have a lot of family farms left. Without Badger Care, we will see that shift.
See, I got to be honest, because when I saw the Wisconsin Farmers Union, I go, well, what do they have to do with Badger Care? What would they have to do? And you know, it didn't dawn on me that the folks who are the hardworking people growing the food and pumping the milk and all that probably can't afford health care themselves.
There's a cost factor, and there are a couple factors that are unique to farming that make a state health insurance option particularly important. One is that farm incomes fluctuate dramatically. Unlike most other professions, other than,
feast or famine.
Exactly. And so our current design of Badger Care can accommodate that. So someone qualifies because their income plummets. If their income goes up, then they pay into the system. They pay a premium. And, as people have told me, I am happy to pay that to have health insurance coverage. So that's one factor that's unique to farms that makes this program so important. The other factor is that lots of private insurance companies will not take farmers. They will not cover farmers no matter how much they're willing to pay, because farming is considered an occupation that is too risky. And so we have farmers say, all the money in the world could not buy me health insurance. And that's, again, why we need a strong state option.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Kara Slaughter. She's with the Wisconsin Farmers Union. WisconsinFarmersUnion.com is their website. You can take a look at that at our site at the RickSmithShow.com. Just click on Kara's name. You go back to this idea of rewarding work. And to be honest, when President Obama took office, it was one of my first hopes for him that he'd be the guy to save work. And, you know, having this option for health care to me seems sensible because we want to keep people on their farms. We want to keep people working. So it seems rational to me to have some type of assistance. But what saddens me is the story that you told, the woman who had to swallow her pride to get health care. That almost makes no sense to me on any level.
Right. And the other thing is that these kinds of insurance programs support entrepreneurship. People stay in jobs that they don't like and aren't particularly suited for, and they're not generating new economic growth because they're locked into their health care plan.
I know tons of people like that who tomorrow, if they had the burden of health care off their back, they would put out their own shingle doing whatever their passion had for them. You know, when I started this radio program, we had to think about health care. You know, I know a lot of people who want to start their own small business. And in this economy, there's opportunity out there. But how many I got three small children. You know, you can't afford to risk the house on one broken arm or one illness.
I've heard from a farmer in Oakfield, Wisconsin. Her husband worked at a job where he had health care. He was desperate to get out of that job, but stayed on because that was where their health care came from. He was laid off. And that company actually took jobs out of state. And so when he lost his job, they said, this is our moment. We're going to start farming. It's our dream. It's what we've always wanted to do. And they said, thank heaven for Badger Care, because it's the reason that we're able to farm. It's the reason that we're able to grow these vegetables that we feed to our family and to families around us. And Badger Care is the defining make or break characteristic, make or break factor that allows us to continue to farm.
So what happens if Badger Care goes away? What I've been saying with adult basic, you're going to end up at where we're at in Pennsylvania. If these people cannot afford to pay the premiums of the new plan, where do they go if they get sick? I'm saying that they end up on the back of the taxpayers by going on Medicaid, stop working, probably end up collecting a bit of welfare, probably end up collecting a bit of all of the other social programs that we have. And in the long run, ending up costing us two or three times as much as had we just offered them this help.
Oh, not even in the long run. They're going to go to the emergency room. And we all know how much an emergency room visit costs. So there will be, I have to imagine, a pretty immediate and dramatic increase in what we are paying nationwide for health care if we kick people off of preventative care. Perfect example, one of the families that I talked to has a daughter who was having serious headaches and stomach problems. They discovered that if she went to regular chiropractic visits, those problems were nearly eliminated. If she doesn't go to those visits, she ends up at the doctor or, you know, worst case scenario, at the emergency room. So you pay a little now or you pay a lot later.
Yeah, but that's something that evidently we have forgotten, not only as a nation, but as a healthcare system. The whole Ben Franklin thing, the ounce of prevention idea, being worth a pound of cure. We don't focus our attention on preventing illness. We're very reactionary in that way.
Right.
Because I guess that's where the profit's at. You know, stopping someone from getting cancer, helping them stay healthy, there's no profit in that.
Right.
You know, shooting them full of drugs and slash and burn, there's lots of money in that.
Well, and when we talk about principle, there's another aspect of this budget repair bill that is very troubling. It's not just that it would cut people off of medical assistance. It's the way in which it does it. So this bill authorizes the Secretary of the Department of Health Services to promulgate rules under the emergency rulemaking provisions of state statute, except that, unlike normal emergency rule provisions, the Secretary doesn't have to make any showing of emergency, and there's no limit to how long that emergency could last.
Nice.
So this is a way of circumventing the law that our elected representatives have put into place, and basically allowing an unelected bureaucrat to change the face of a health.
Just on a whim.
Right. Right. That will affect hundreds of thousands of people in the state. And we really feel like this is a program that deserves to have a full hearing, and these decisions should be made by people's elected representatives. The way that these changes would go into effect would be that the secretary could make the changes. One committee of the legislature would have what's called passive review, meaning if they did nothing, the rules would go into place without a single public hearing and without any vetting by the full legislature. It's anti-democratic.
Well, it's anti a lot of things. And, you know, what surprises me is I haven't heard much of that. I mean, to be honest, the mainstream media in this country has only seemed to focus on those greedy union workers and those greedy teachers who have those generous black health care plans and the big pensions. The reality is this is not about the money. It's about stealing people's rights. And now you're telling me in this bill we're stealing people's health care as well. It's not surprising you have tens of thousands of people walking up into Capitol steps.
It has been fascinating to watch the coverage and the conversation about this bill unfold. But you're absolutely right. It began with a serious outcry about the collective bargaining provisions. The next thing we started to hear about was the healthcare implications. Then we started to hear about what's happening with the giveaway of power plants. And the next round of discussion could be the implications for local government aid. This bill was being pushed forward at a breakneck pace. I talked to a legislator, a Republican legislator on Friday, 10 minutes before he was walking to the floor to vote on this bill, who said, "I haven't read it. I don't know what it says." It's not, I don't think that's his fault. One of your two main responsibilities as a legislator is to know what the bill says, but the other big one is to listen to constituents.
Absolutely.
And those phone lines, those email inboxes have been flooded. They're doing one of their most important jobs by listening to constituents, but the trade-off is that doesn't give you a lot of time to read the bill. And they have to do both, and they haven't been given the time by their leadership to do that. It's
well, they've got an agenda, man. Never mind with all the details about reading. It's there. Don't worry about it. Pass it. That seems to be the mentality. They learned from the Obama administration. They learned from 2009. Don't worry about debate. Don't worry about what's in it. Just get our ideology pushed through, ram it through, and that's where we're going to go.
Right. And I firmly believe that the test of democracy is not its speed. It is its reflection of the will of the people. And we need to slow this process down. It could very well be, and it almost certainly is the case, that we will need to make some changes to our medical assistance programs given the economic condition of the state. Those are just the big ticket items along with education and corrections in the state budget. And there's no way to quit having to pay a lot of money on debt without raising some income and taking a look at those programs. There's a place for that discussion, but not this way and not this fast, not without a single public hearing on the issue of Badger Care.
Two quick questions before we wrap this up. One, what do you tell the people of Pennsylvania? Because I do believe this kind of stuff is coming to my state. I do believe that we're going to see this in the coming months. What kind of advice would you give folks?
One of the things that has been very compelling for legislators is personal stories. And so I would ask those individuals who are receiving the benefits of those state programs to put pen to paper and write a couple of paragraphs about what this program means to you. And it doesn't have to be eloquent. It doesn't have to be – you don't even have to have correct spelling. What you have to have is a story about what this program means to you. And have that ready and spread it far and wide.
And last question I've got. You mentioned the people. And anytime I hear someone say, "I just want them to do the will of the people," I always ask which people, because I do believe that this bill is doing exactly what the people who gave them all the campaign dollars and all of the money that put them into power. I do believe they're doing what those people want done.
You know, I think that healthcare is not a Democratic or Republican issue. As Farmers Union, we have members on both sides of the aisle, and we, farmers come from all political stripes. Those are the people that I care about, the people who are part of the state's proud tradition of agriculture, proud tradition of manufacturing, forestry, and we have a proud tradition of bipartisanship in Wisconsin, and that's not being honored right now.
And this is a beautiful state, and I hate to see what's going on here. Kara Slaughter, I appreciate your time. Wisconsin Farmers Union, wisconsinfarmersunion.com. We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
make us be brave, make us play nice, let us be together tonight.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Media tycoon Murdoch bought the Wall Street Journal last year, and in short order, he has turned it into a tongue-clucking sympathizer with and proselytizer for the biggest of big businesses, not only on its editorial pages, but also in its news stories. For example, a recent report on the economic trouble of America's financial giants was so saccharinely sympathetic to the bankers that you could practically see teardrops on the page. The opening paragraph wailed that the banking industry is, quote, racked by the financial crisis and facing slower revenue growth. Nowhere in the story was there even an allusion to the crucial fact that the racking was brought upon the poor bankers, not to mention the rest of us, by, guess who? The bankers themselves. Instead, the journal wrote admiringly of Wells Fargo, American Express, State Street, and other powerhouses of finance that are nobly struggling, quote, in challenging economic conditions to cut costs and become more efficient. Would this admirable drive for efficiency include any sacrifices in salary, perks, and bonuses of the absurdly pampered top bankers? Holy Gordon Gecko, get real! No, sacrifices for others. As the title of the journal's article puts it, lenders see little choice, layoffs. And Murdoch's Wall Street Journal is not about to be so rude as to mention that if his banker chums really want to become leaner, they could start by looking in the mirror. Indeed, in deference to the tender sensibilities of Wall Street, the journal doesn't even refer to the offing of thousands of bank workers as firings. Rather, these people are soullessly termed headcount reductions. This is Jim Hightower saying, in word and in tone, Rupert Murdoch is boiling the journalism out of the once proud news pages of the journal, reducing the paper's proper name to Wall Street's Journal.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Also, if you want to contact us while we're on the road, you can email us, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. I appreciate the thoughts, the comments. Still have a little technical problem with the phones, but you can watch us online. We are streaming live from our website at thericksmithshow.com. Again, remember, mark your calendars. This Saturday at noon, the Rally to Save the American Dream, brought to you by the folks at Keystone Progress and a number of other progressive groups. We've got to get this down. We've got to start working on this, taking to the streets and having our voices heard. The Tea Party became famous for getting two or three people to act, dress up like the founding fathers and carry a musket. That got a lot of PR. That got a lot of go. This is going to have to be average everyday people coming to the streets with their children, coming with their grandparents. Look, you know, when we were walking around today, Jake, how many people did we see bringing their children, carrying signs, pushing them in strollers, carrying them on their shoulders? This is an amazing, amazing time.
You're absolutely right, Rick. Just a plethora of people. When you stop and think, and we're not talking about 6 or 7 year olds. We're not talking about 4 or 5 year olds. You're talking about some babies that are a year or younger, and they're with their parents. I mean, it's a beautiful. Again, it's a beautiful. I can't emphasize this enough. This is the most beautiful example of democracy in action that I've ever seen. It is truly amazing, and I think we need to come. Sometimes I find myself just stepping back and kind of trying to realize how historic this really is and not going through it too fast so that we don't really, as we're going through, understand the gravity of what's taking place here. This is absolutely, truly historic.
You know, what I'm surprised at is you walk through the community And we have spent a lot of time walking around the streets of this beautiful city. And all of the businesses that appear to be firmly behind these workers. You know, we took some pictures, and we're going to put them up on our Facebook page, try and get them up on our website at thericksmithshow.com. But all of these businesses, these small businesses, who right underneath the name of their business, we support the workers, we support these people's fight, we support the teachers all around this city. And it's that kind of support, that groundswell of support that has to happen. And we have to learn the lessons that are being taught here in Madison, Wisconsin, because this is the way that you fight this stuff back. This is the way you save your livelihood. This is how you save your city.
This truly is an exercise of the people. I was inside tonight, maybe an hour and a half, and the speakers and the people who were leading the rally were all young. They were 20, 25, sometimes some of them weren't even 20 years old, and here they are in the vanguard. Now, yes, behind the scenes you have older veterans, especially labor people, but what's beautiful to see is these young, intelligent, vibrant young people out there exercising their rights. That's beautiful.
Well, you know, I got to be honest. Most of the people that I've seen, they're young people who have taken to this, and they're going to fight the fight. Because I think they understand this is their country, this is their future, and if they don't fight this back right now, they're going to have problems moving forward. Look, at the end of this, I do believe these kids understand that if they want to go to college and become teachers, they want to go to college and become nuclear scientists who work at the two nuke plants here in the state of Wisconsin. If they want to become social workers, they want to have some kind of security on the job, some kind of safety, some kind of a reasonable pay. We talked to one teacher yesterday. He said, look, I've worked my whole life to have this job, my dream job. I'm good at it. I love my job. I love my kids. This is how I'm going to spend the next 30, 40, 50 years of my life in this community, helping create a better tomorrow for these kids. But what they're talking about is, I'm not going to be able to make a living. I'm not going to be able to support my family doing what I love. I'm going to have to go and do something else. And for me, again, you take someone like this guy out of the equation, how many kids lose out? If you can't afford to go after the best and brightest, and this guy was an energetic guy, and I talked to him about, you know, his love of teaching. Those are the people we want, man. Those are the people we want to keep. But something like this, where we're talking about cutting the teachers' pay 18 to 40% here in the state of Wisconsin, coming home to roost, man. The whole voucher thing, what do you think that's about? Oh, it's about giving students, the parents, the right to choose. Nonsense. It's about stealing wages from workers. It's about cutting the pay, the benefits of teachers in these private schools. That's what it's about, man. That's it. And do you think the costs are going to go down any? No. There's going to be a privatized scheme to this. There's going to be money in the pocket. It's that simple.
And what's sad is, Rick, and I know you've known some of the teachers. I know when I was going to high school, the real good ones, they absolutely made a difference in children's lives. I mean, you think about that. They put them in the right direction, and they had a positive influence in those kids' lives for the rest of their life. If I can give you just a glimpse of what's going on in that Capitol, we talked about the young people. There was a young man there. This was about 6 o'clock, and he said, is there anybody who can take over for me? He said, I've been doing this since noon, and here he was leading the cheers up there, you know, coaxing the crowd. He was up there energized. It was just constant motion. And he had been doing that for 6 or 7 hours straight. You know, uncommon acts like that are becoming common up here in Madison. And again, it's just magnificent to see.
Yeah, amazing, amazing stuff. Anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about what's going on here. Maybe a little history. Maybe some other things we can talk about. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Smith Show.
If you or a loved one has suffered a workplace injury, don't jeopardize your benefits by not fully knowing your rights. Don't be misled by those whose job it is to minimize your injury, your disability, your lifetime medical coverage, and your financial recovery. Order your free book by Calhoun Associates by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Get your copy of The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 717-695-4722.
Is that old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Demanding the super rich to pay their fair share for once. The Rick Smith Show. I got a
I got to tell you, you don't need to tell those kids over at the Capitol that. The folks in the Capitol here in Madison absolutely fired up. Tens of thousands of people marching on the Capitol grounds today. An amazing day, a festive day. And you know what? I think what's going on here is spreading to other states. They are exporting this enthusiasm, this can-do attitude, and this attitude that, you know what, you just don't have to take. You just don't have to take the beating. You know, amazing, amazing stuff. You know, what's that saying, birds of a feather? Last week, citizens voicing their opinion of Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker's assault on workers' rights. They visited his home to have their voices heard, obviously. Well, it seems Wisconsin's junior senator, Republican Ron Johnson, he's taken offense to that, saying he was deeply troubled. And, you know, saying that he thought it was out of line and out of bounds. He then said he would do anything he could do to support the state's Senate and Assembly in their quest to steal workers' rights and steal health care from them as well. And look, everyday people, they will be heard, even if they got to go to their house. Anyway, this is being exported, and that's why we've asked Allison Lute. She's a community organizer with the Central Indiana Jobs with Justice. Allison, thanks for taking time for me.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Can you tell me what's going on in your capital?
Yeah, well, we legislatively are kind of worse off than Wisconsin. Our public employees don't have collective bargaining rights right now anyway. The governor got rid of them on his first day a few years back. But we have bills that are assaulting teachers' collective bargaining, public employees' collective bargaining, the falsely labeled secret ballot, caps on minimum wage, and now right to work.
That seems like, you know, again, it seems like a cut and paste for Wisconsin, for Indiana, for Ohio, Pennsylvania, where we're from. It seems like this is a well-orchestrated plan that the extreme right is attempting to perpetrate.
Yes, it is definitely a well-organized national agenda. And this is not coming from the Indiana people. This is coming from the outside and the people who funded these campaigns. So we are trying to rally our forces to really show what Indiana Hoosiers want.
Yeah, that's the reason we came here to Madison, Wisconsin, to show the folks back home exactly how we go after this, exactly how we fight back on this, because as you've pointed out, this stuff isn't coming from the people of these states. This is a well-orchestrated, well-funded attack plan by the big corporate special interests.
Yes, we will never have the money that they have, and so it's really important that we have people. And so today at our state house, we staged a sit-in during the Senate proceedings because they were hearing a bill that will forbid collective bargaining for teachers. And our House of Representatives was not able to function today because they did not have a quorum. Our Democratic representatives have also walked out in support of workers' rights.
So are they in Illinois with the Democrats from Wisconsin as well?
I think so. I don't know that they're in the same part of the state, but they are definitely not in Indiana.
And I got to be honest, I'm proud of them. I'm proud of the people, the 14 from Wisconsin that took off.
Definitely. That's amazing. You know, we sometimes question whether or not they really have our backs with all the money we give them, and today they showed that they do. And tomorrow we're going to be raising a Hall of Fame in support of them, to thank them at the State House, kind of a banner system like the championships and the retired jerseys. We're going to have a Hall of Fame and a Hall of Shame listing all the bills that are really trying to kill the middle class.
Good for you. What's the next plan here? I understand you guys, as you said, you sat in today. Are there any plans like here in Madison of taking over and spending the night?
We've been talking about it. Hopefully that will be something people feel compelled to do tomorrow, since our legislators are gone. We want to take their place and really stand up. We've talked about doing that. We're only 2 days in, but we've got some great role models up to the north.
Because I got to tell you, you know, this is the time to fight this stuff back. I heard one guy told me today, a Republican guy who was all in favor of, oh, let's just give this a try, and in a couple of years we can always go back. And I said, no, once this stuff goes away, once they take your rights away, even you should know better. And it just has.
If you talk to, you know, I think it sounds easy, but my generation and people my age don't know what it is like to do an organizing campaign in a workplace. And the ones we have going on now in the hotels have been going on for 3 years with battle after battle. And so if you talk to the folks who fought and died for the rights we have now, to just go down this path, we will never go back.
I agree. And, you know, what we heard during this past election, and this has been kind of my talking point since the middle of last year, that all we heard from you know, people like Tom Corbett in Pennsylvania, Scott Walker, Rick Scott down in Florida, Kasich in Ohio, across the board, is we need to be more business friendly. We need to run government like businesses. And what that is that's code for getting rid of any worker with the right to have a voice, getting rid of the unions, getting rid of any opportunity for people to stand up.
Yes, today or yesterday on the Diane Rehm show, our governor called public employees unions worse than the oil industry lobby. And so, you know, he's just trying to make us out as the fall guy for everything. And that's just not the case. You know, they're blaming their fiscal mismanagement on workers. And, you know, it sounds good when you want to save money and be, you know, take care of the budget, but people don't understand that good jobs that people have fought for with a voice in the workplace is what's going to suffer.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Last question I've got for you. You know, I'm looking at what's going on in here in Wisconsin and Ohio, and where you're at in Indiana, is an opportunity for your generation and the college kids that I'm seeing here to learn labor's history, to learn the history of organizing and the history of people coming together and fighting for these things, because you're going to be the ones who are going to have to fight this next battle.
Yet today we had people get out their smartphones and look up the lyrics to We Shall Overcome and Solidarity Forever because some people didn't know. But if that's what it takes, you know, to educate them, we have a college student and young adults open mic tomorrow morning, poetry slam, you know, talent contest to come out and tell it like it is the way they want to bring more people in, because it's definitely an educational opportunity.
And this is an excellent organizational opportunity to get people in, get people rallying around a cause. Because nothing draws a crowd like an overreaching tyrannical government wanting to steal your rights.
Exactly. And the problem is, you know, how are you expected to pay for college education? How are you expected to pay for a house? How are they going to have the American dream? If in Indiana, anyway, with things like right to work, they'll lose $5,500, you know, per worker. Our economy can't handle that, and we're not offering them good jobs when they graduate. So we're definitely hoping to have those folks out tomorrow and ask them to come with us to occupy our state house.
Yeah, I'd love to hear back what happens tomorrow. Please keep us informed of the goings-on, if you would, please.
We will. We will. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Allison Luth, community organizer with the Central Indiana Jobs with Justice. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, a little bit more here from Madison, Wisconsin, the front lines of the class war. We're right back after this. Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made, and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Thillman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make Pennsylvania happy.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
You know, this is that magic moment. It is everything. And we need to do it right now. And these kids are. I give the folks here in Madison all the credit in the world. And back home in Pennsylvania, you folks are going to have the opportunity this Saturday at noon. Our friends over at Keystone Progress are sponsoring the rally to save the American dream. We hope that everyone has an opportunity to come out to the state capitol. And, you know, bring your kids, bring your family. Make this the same kind of event on Saturday as they have here in Wisconsin. Because, you know, this is almost a festival occasion. It's just an amazing, amazing time. A new tell-all memoir from embittered former aide to Sarah Palin, who portrays her as nearly obsessed with her political adversaries and consumed with every slight, real or perceived, against her in the media. The unpublished manuscript reveals that, among other things, Palin penned letters to the editor praising herself, only to be sent under other names. Why do I not have a problem believing that at all? Why do I not have a problem with that, Jake? You know she's a narcissist. You know she's about an inch deep. And she'd go running when they start saying bad things about her. Why?
Well, you know, maybe things are starting to catch up to.
Okay, Sarah.
Yes.
Anyway, the president was in Cleveland today. He has a small business agenda. Beg people to find out what they need. You know what small business needs, Mr. President? Customers. Pretty simple stuff. Customers. So maybe take some of that money that we handed out to the very top. You remember just before Christmas, remember that discussion? Taking all that money from the tax base, handing it to the folks at the very top of the economic ladder. Well, an interesting piece by Robert Reich, a guy who I like the little guy. He's exposing the Republican Party's grand plan. And you know what's sad? There are some people who think that he's actually exposing something. He writes, the Republican strategy is to split the vast middle and working class, pitting unionized workers against non-unionized workers, public sector workers against non-public sector workers, older workers within sight of Medicare and Social Security against younger workers who don't believe these programs will be for them, and the poor against the working middle class. Did you just figure this out, Rob? Did you just get this now, Bob? Did that just pop into your head? Because I say, wow, you're about 30 years behind the curve. Because this is what they've been doing pretty much, well, from the beginning of time, but most certainly for the last 30 years. They've been slicing and dicing the working class of this country, pitting white against black. You forgot that one. Hispanic against black, Hispanic against white. They've been slicing and dicing us for years. So are we surprised? Are we surprised? No, we're not. We shouldn't be. And if we are, we need to get our heads slapped. Reich continues by saying, Wisconsin's Republican Governor Scott Walker and his GOP legislature are seeking to end almost all union rights for teachers. He goes on to explain that blaming teachers, public sector workers for budgetary matters at the state level is part of the GOP's overall goal to hide the economic excesses of the wealthiest Americans. Bob, were you listening to the show yesterday when I held up the USA Today that said for the wealthy, luxury is back? Have you not been paying attention for the past couple of years since the collapse that Wall Street's profits are back, that the bonuses are back? Everybody's fat and happy on the casino floor there in Wall Street, except the people who work. Those are the people who are getting screwed in all this. Reich goes on to say Republicans would rather no one notice their campaign to shrink the pie even further with additional tax cuts for the rich, making the Bush tax cuts permanent, further reducing the estate tax and allowing the wealthy to shift ever more of their income into capital gains taxed at 15%. Gee, again, I think he's been listening to the program because this is something I've been complaining about for years. This idea that I can sit on my yacht and drink pina coladas and, you know, have lightly clad lasses walking around feeding me grapes. collecting my dividend checks, paying 15% tax, while these guys out here, the laborers, the electricians, the tin knockers, all the union folks who are busting their behinds are paying more than double that. Explain how that's fair. Explain how that's even rational. He goes on to say that two other parts of the GOP attack include debate on the federal budget in Washington and the polarization of the Supreme Court. Well, gee, Bob, I think you're a little late to that party. We've been talking about that for a bunch of years now as well. But I give him credit, though, because the reality is I think there are people out there who haven't figured this out. So maybe Bob has to go out and continue this. He went on to explain that the recent attacks on U.S. labor unions in the public sector is predicated on this lie that workers in the private sector make less than those of the public sector workers. He says they don't when you take into account their education. Bob says, in fact, over the last 15 years, the pay of public sector workers, including teachers, has dropped. Dropped relative to the private sector employees with the same educational level, even when you include those Cadillac healthcare plans and those overly generous retirement benefits. You know, because heaven forbid someone want to make sure that their kid gets to see a doctor when they're sick, and, you know, heaven forbid that when they want to retire, they retire with some security. Heaven forbid. And you look at what's at the heart of the protest here in Wisconsin. It's this assertion that the workers, the workers who have this right to collective bargaining, somehow have mushroomed the state deficits. When the reality is ask them how much money he gave away. That is a big part of it. You look at states that have no bargaining rights whatsoever, like Nevada, like North Carolina, like Arizona. They've got massive budget deficits. Some over 30% of their spending. So to say, oh, it's these collective bargaining things that do this. No, it's nothing to do with that. It's Wall Street. And for me, I go back to what we said at the beginning. A rational transaction tax. Very small, 0.25%. You know, I think investing should be investing. If I think Jake Long's got a good product, he's got a good company, I want to throw a couple of grand his way. I'm investing in him and his company, and he's going to pay me it back with a little bit of interest when he does well. That's investing. What we're doing now, not so much. Not so much at all.
Well, you know, the common theme of the Republicans is the public workers are to blame for the shortfall, but yet you look at what's happening in our economy, what's happening in this nation. And by the way, this crisis didn't just happen this year. This has been coming.
This is well fabricated.
This has been coming. Well, there is a shortfall, but there's a shortfall for reasons which they don't even want the American public to understand. First of all, you have millions of jobs that have left this country because of failed trade policies. You have a middle class that shrunk. You have wages that have actually factored in with inflation have actually gone down. You have all those factors. And somewhere along the line, then you have an economy that just hit the tank. And then you have, like in Pennsylvania, and you know this to be true, you have the legislature that when times were decent, and they should have made those contributions to these, and yes, there's a big debt as far as retirements, when they should have made scheduled payments into those retirement accounts, they said, things are good. You know, we don't have to do it. Let's look good. Let's get reelected. Come out of this smelling good. And that's exactly what they did and what happened. Several years later when the economy tanked, here we are in this big fat hole.
But again, it comes down to all of these crises. Every one of these things that they say, the sky's falling, are their creation. You know, you look at the bubble on Wall Street. They created that by undoing Glass-Steagall. You go and you look at the housing bubble. They did that by allowing banks to do away with any sane, rational requirements, by not having any oversight. You know, when someone could buy a house and then take out a loan for 125% of the value of that home, do you not think you're creating a massive problem? I mean, really, come on, stop and think for a second. You know, when my grandparents bought their house, they needed 20% down, 6 months in the bank. The list goes on of all of the requirements to buy a home. You know, over the years, they've dwindled that down, thrown some you know, avenues for working class people to buy homes, which I agree with. But then the banks just went hog wild, and then they weren't responsible. You know, this whole idea, I was thinking about the last couple of mortgages that I got. I didn't actually get them through a bank. I got them through a mortgage broker who was offering me really, really competitive rates. And then he was turning around and selling them. He didn't have any stake in the game whatsoever because he was out there selling as many mortgages back to these big banks as possible. Explain to me how that was smart. So we created this problem, this massive problem, just like we've done with Social Security. And John McCain can say it's a Ponzi scheme all he wants. The reality is they squandered the resources. That fund should be flush in cash. But what did they do? They stole the money, and they don't want to pay it back. Reagan, during the 80s, spent $1 trillion on Star Wars. Nobody wants to talk about that wasted revenue because, the military budget sacrosanct. But it's never done really anything. And look, I'm not one who's against research and development, but tell me what it's for. Show me the value in it. Education, there's a value in education. But, you know, at the end of all of this, folks, it comes down to what kind of priorities do we have. And I'm looking at the people here in Wisconsin, and their priorities are pretty simple. Don't steal from me.
Amen. You know, if I can comment, Rick, and you mentioned the banks, and you and I have talked about community banks, and I'm old enough to remember community banks. When you had Glass-Steagall, and those community banks gave you a loan, if you couldn't make the payments, they suffered. They not only suffered, but they invested. They invested within the community. Once Glass-Steagall, and once we allowed these banks to become investment companies, they didn't particularly care that they wanted to loan their money within the community and help the community prosper. They would give that money to wherever, to the highest bidder. And therein lies our problem. They became less banks and more investment companies. And well, that, now we have the mess.
And the other part of it is we had a Fed that was giving them near free money. So there was almost no losing. I mean, that was part of it as well, which I'm a fan of taking back our currency and doing away with the Fed. I'm a big fan of that. I think it's a way to look at. But in the end of all of this, if you continue this idea of our fractional banking system, because as you're talking about with the mortgages, the banks had to keep some reserves, which means that was money you couldn't loan out. That's the cushion you had to have so that you didn't fail, and you had to keep a certain number. What we're doing now is we're lending out money, and the reserves are smaller and smaller and smaller. And then who ends up being the ones who hold the who holds the bag? You and I do. We're the ones who always clean up the mess. We're the ones who are always asking, we got to sacrifice, tighten your belts a little bit. You know, I still don't understand why it is that redistributing wealth to benefit the working class, the people who create the wealth, somehow that's socialism, but bailing out the banks and tightening our belt when spreading the pain, that's patriotic? What the heck is that?
You just didn't get it. That's capitalism.
Well, I guess I didn't get it. Anyway.
You didn't get the memo.
I must have missed the memo. If you've got the memo, please send it to me. I'd love to see it. Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, the president of the Professional Firefighters of Wisconsin, Malin Mitchell, is going to be here talking about the firefighters who, you know, amazing moment today as they walked in. Look, these people got a lot of clout. We're going to talk to Malin Mitchell right back after this. This is The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Somebody tells you that you're over someone else. So what's it all about? It's my
smart policy. And sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show. It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
Another day, another high-energy protest of thousands at Wisconsin's state capitol in Madison as resistance continues to an attempt to destroy collective bargaining rights for public workers. Solidarity rallies were held in 38 states to protest attacks on collective bargaining rights for public workers, and the Egyptian labor movement has expressed its solidarity with Wisconsin workers. Wisconsin Education Association President Mary Bell.
This is not about pay. This is not about benefits. This is about busting the force of the workers, the voice of the workers in their workplace.
A free Robert Wright's concert featuring Tom Morello, Wayne Kramer, and others drew thousands in Madison as protests rang through the city's Capitol Square and echoed off the marble walls inside the Capitol Rotunda Monday night. The 14 Democrats in Wisconsin's Senate held firm, staying away to block a vote on the bill that would strip collective bargaining rights from public workers. Workers are on the march to defend collective bargaining in Ohio's state capitol today as well. Republicans there are also trying to push through legislation ending union rights for state workers. AFSCME's Stacey Ben Taylor.
AFSCME is taking 14 to 15 buses from around the state up to the state house so that we can rally other unions. The transit union, many of the private sector unions are also taking buses up so that we can stand in solidarity against this attack on public employees.
As tens of thousands of protesters continue to make their voices heard in and around the Wisconsin Capitol building in Madison, the city has also become a hotbed of activity for visits from labor leaders. Jesse Russell reports.
On Monday, SEIU President Mary Kay Henry was in town and sat down with Workers Independent News to explain why she feels what's happening in Wisconsin is so very important for the entire country.
This governor has put in the tax cuts for corporations in a situation where corporations are not paying their fair share, and workers just agreed to take 6% wage cuts. And these Republicans and the governors aren't willing to come to the table and think about shared sacrifice.
One of the most iconic images being sent out to the world from the peaceful rallies is the thousands of workers and students that have occupied the Capitol Rotunda for 7 nights straight. Henry described her first impression when she set foot into that space on Monday morning.
Sort of an affirmation of what working people believe when we come together, that anything is possible, and that whatever amount of money the opposition may have, it isn't enough to sort of take away our voice.
Doug Cunningham, Workers Independent News.
Where common sense, reason, and community come together. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Remember, also, you can email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. Unlike the veiled threats to call out the National Guard, Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker is now resorting to actual threats, warning that state employees could start receiving layoff notices as early as next week if his rights-stealing bill to kill collective bargaining isn't passed soon. So I'm kind of interested to see how that's going to work and how the people here are going to respond. The firefighters have been and the police have been kind of cut out of this because I guess the governor didn't want to take them on just yet. But they are, I think they have to know it, in the fish tank as well. That's why I've asked firefighter president. He is the president of the Professional Firefighters of Wisconsin, Malin Mitchell, to come on and talk to us. Malin, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Rick. How you doing?
I'm good. You know, I'm looking at this, what's going on here in Wisconsin, and this is something that our listeners back in Pennsylvania have to see and have to learn from.
Yeah, and you know what? And really, this is really ground zero for the rest of the world. I've been here probably 12, 13 hours a day for the past week and a half after the budget repair address was talked about, and really, this is an attack on the middle class, and we were, like you said, we were exempt from the bill, fire, police, and the state troopers. But we decided, you know what, we've done enough, and we cannot let our other members be treated so radically different than what we've been treated. We are okay with helping to pay part of the pension. We're okay with helping to pay part of health insurance premium. But we cannot sit back idly and let our other brothers and sisters be treated so different than we are as far as collective bargaining provisions in the bill.
Right. One of the things that I've been saying is, look, you know, he cut you guys out for a reason. He didn't want to fight that political fight, figuring that he could divide the unions and divide and conquer. And to your credit, I got to be honest, when the firefighters came marching into the Capitol the other day, it was a goosebump moment for me.
Well, I appreciate that. And we're not doing it for the heroism or the accolades. What we're doing it for is the right thing to do. And what we feel is, I mean, firefighters and police, whenever there's an emergency, we come in and we respond. And that's our job, and that's what we do.
And this is an emergency.
There's an emergency right now in the House of Labor, and we'll come in and put the fire out. And if it does crumble down, we're going to come back in and be with our brothers and sisters, and we're going to rebuild it. We're not going to let him conquer and divide. We appreciate that the government does, though, realize that our job is inherently different. It's inherently dangerous. But we cannot do that. There's been a lot of misconceptions that we support the governor in his feat for being governor, but we actually supported his opponent. The Milwaukee firefighters and the Milwaukee police are the ones who actually backed him and were the ones who actually endorsed him for governor. But nonetheless, this is wrong. And this is an attack on the middle class. We have over 200,000 public employees that take care of Wisconsin, and we feel they all should have the right to go to their employer and talk about hours, wages, and working conditions, and be okay with that. That's what collective bargaining is about. It's not a win-lose situation. It's about talking about hours, wages, and working conditions, and it's not a win-lose. It's something that's good for people all over the United States. It's good for people in Wisconsin. So we're at ground zero right now, and we're going to take care of business, and I guarantee the firefighters will be here every day until this job gets done.
Well, good on you. And, you know, I'm looking at this, and the first thing I said when this story broke is that this is a governor who really wants to be king. He doesn't want to sit down across the table and negotiate, given the fact that most of the workers in the state, as I understand it, have given back. There have been massive concessions over the past couple of years. Given the fact that, as I understand it, he's given out a bunch of tax breaks here in the first month or so of his term. Again, shifting resources from state workers, from firefighters, teachers, to the folks who really don't need it all that much in the wealth class.
Yeah, and you know what? This is, if the governor really wants to say this is about the budget, that's fine. We can deal with that. We don't want to price ourselves out of a job. Nobody ever becomes a police officer or a firefighter or a snowplow driver, a teacher, to become rich.
Right.
We don't want to price ourselves out of a job. We understand that. So if this is about the budget, that's why firefighters and police officers are standing up, and I can talk for myself as well as the president of the executive director of the Professional Police of Wisconsin, that we are okay to sit down with the governor and talk about concessions that we can help make so that we can get rid of collective bargaining stuff. If you get rid of the collective bargaining provisions, we're fine. And we will listen to that, and we will sit down. So he's going to capture more money. He will capture more money and help the budget crisis in the state, now the budget crisis in municipalities by listening to our proposal as opposed to what he's got right now in the budget repair address.
Let me ask you, what do you think this is about? I mean, personally, I'm of the mindset that they just hate their political opponents, and this is payback for all of the years of labor unions supporting their political enemies. And to be honest, you know, and I've said this a number of times, if there were pro-union Republicans out there, I would support them based on the fact that they're going to support me. What we've seen, you know, we've seen the parties kind of divide.
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you, though, that, I mean, I think this is very easy with this. Well, this is about breaking up the union so that we have less of a strength. I mean, it's easy to put union provisions, collective bargaining provisions in a budget that really is supposed to be about money and supposed to be about monetary reasons. I think it's very clear that this is about union busting. It's about breaking up the unions. Now, as far as I can speak from my organization, Professional Firefighters of Wisconsin, we've always garnered bipartisan support in all the bills that we helped to get passed through the legislature. So we are not a partisan union. we take care of both sides, and we agree with both sides, and we disagree with both sides.
Right.
So as far as I'm concerned, I don't know why this is coming about. Us being exempt, you know, while we appreciate that, we just cannot sit idly by and let just other people that are middle class get treated so much radically differently than what we're being treated.
Right. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with President of the Professional Firefighters of Wisconsin, Malin Mitchell. You know, Malin, as I'm looking at this, and again, we can have discussions about why, I look at this bill, and this is destructive from top to bottom. A little earlier, we talked to a woman who pointed out that they wanted to take Badger Care and steal health insurance from working people. They want to take away the power plants and privatize them and do all kinds of really toxic things that the people that I really don't believe the people of Wisconsin are really behind.
No, the people of Wisconsin are not behind it. I've been at every rally since this has started, and the governor has always said that the rallies are. We have people from Nevada, we have people from Chicago, we have people from Iowa and outside of state. But I have talked to nothing but Wisconsinites, nothing but, and I have spoken at every rally, and all the firefighters. I can speak for the firefighters that come. We've had today. We have more than over 400 firefighters from all around the state. None from out of state that have said that this is a wrong bill. Now, these are guys and gals that really do not have to be here because we are exempt. We are still, according to the current bill, we are exempt. Police officers as well, we are exempt. And we are getting a great reception, but we're not here for heroism.
Right.
Being heroes. We are here because we think it's the right thing to do. And I spoke Saturday at the rally, and there were over 100,000 people there. And I would believe that those are most of Wisconsinites thinking that this is wrong. This is the middle class. This is a working middle class in Wisconsin. This is the heart of America. And to take away collective bargaining rights does nothing. Does absolutely nothing.
At the end of this, Milan, at the end of this, you know, the reality is that the claim by the governor that these are all outsiders are completely false because we had absolutely no problem getting a hotel room in this city. And look, I know they've got a lot of hotels and they've got a lot of rooms here, but if all of these folks, these tens of thousands or the 100,000 that you pointed out on Saturday are from out of town, one would think that the hotel rooms would be full. Sorry, they're not.
Yeah, these are not outsiders. These are people that work right here in Wisconsin. These are people that work here in Madison, but it's amazing. When you come out here, you get the feel of the people. I mean, and rallies are great. And movements are great, but at the end of the day, I think this is about honoring labor. And to honor labor, you're honoring the working class and the middle class. We have over 200,000, like I said, working class public employees. And but the thing is, we don't just have public employees out here. We have private sector employees. I marched today with Jesse Jackson and Tammy Baldwin and two small business owners that are private sector. They're not even unionized. They realize that this will not just hurt us, but it's a trickle-down effect. As Ronald Reagan used to say, it's not just going to trickle down to the union members. It's going to trickle down to businesses around the state. It's going to trickle down to real estate. It's going to trickle down to everything. If people don't have the money and they can't bargain for their wages, hours, and working conditions, then that's going to kill the middle class. And the middle class is what supports Wisconsin because we are a heart of America. We are a middle-class, blue-collar state.
You know, you bring up an excellent point, and the president was in my hometown of Cleveland, Ohio today talking about asking small business, well, what can we do for you? And my response is always, give them customers. And you give them customers by making sure that the workers have wages in their pocket. And I walk up and down the streets here in Madison, and I look at the number of small businesses who have signs in their windows. We support the workers. We support the teachers. The small business in this community looks solidly behind what you guys are doing.
Well, they're right behind it. And another point to that, the small businesses are behind it. Not only are the small businesses behind us, our city and municipalities are behind us. They don't want more mandates or democracy thrown down to them from the city. The problem is that the cities are saying, you know what, we need unions because it gives our employees the right to collectively bargain, and then we know what they want. You know, 75 years ago, when the employee called Free Choice Act came, it was actually called the Employee-Employer Peace Act because it brought together the employer-employee to the bargaining table to talk that affected both sides.
Yep.
And it was called a Peace Act, not an act that got between things. It actually brought them together to talk about things, and it made a better employee for the employer. So that's why our employer has come out. Our city mayor our mayor Dave Cicilletis has said that I am with the unions and I am with the workers and I will support the union and their movement. He has marched with us. So that's our own mayor.
Good for him. You know,
that right there tells you that this is not a bill that is for the people. This is a bill that is totally against labor, and all this is doing is busting up the union.
Yep. You bring up an interesting point that I don't think most people, even most labor people know, that the Labor Relations Board was, just as you said, a means to bring people to the table and to have industrial peace.
Right. And that's what it was. It was peace. It was called the Peace Act, and that's what it's doing. It's taking care of the middle class and the working individuals. So we have to keep it going, and that's why we're here. We're gonna be here until the job is done. And the police officers and the firefighters will be here and help to take care of this.
That's what I want to see. Mylon Mitchell, I appreciate your time. Thanks so much. Keep up the fight, brother.
All right. Thanks, man.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Can make America better. The Rick Smith Show.
Media tycoon Rupert Murdoch bought the Wall Street Journal last year, and in short order, he has turned it into a tongue-clucking sympathizer with and proselytizer for the biggest of big businesses, not only on its editorial pages, but also in its news stories. For example, a recent report on the economic trouble of America's financial giants was so saccharinely sympathetic to the bankers that you could practically see teardrops on the page. The opening paragraph wailed that the banking industry is, quote, a the fandori. Was there even an allusion to the crucial fact that the racking was brought upon the poor bankers, not to mention the rest of us, by, guess who, the bankers themselves? Instead, the Journal wrote admiringly of Wells Fargo, American Express, State Street, and other powerhouses of finance that are nobly struggling, quote, in challenging economic conditions to cut costs and become more efficient. Would this admirable drive for efficiency include any sacrifices in salary, perks, and bonuses of the absurdly pampered top bankers? Holy Gordon Gecko, get real! No, sacrifices for others. As the title of the Journal's article puts it, lenders see little choice, layoffs. And Murdoch's Wall Street Journal is not about to be so rude as to mention that if his banker chums really want to become leaner, they could start by looking in the mirror. Indeed, in deference to the tender sensibilities of Wall Street, the Journal doesn't even refer to the offing of thousands of bank workers as firings. Rather, these people are soullessly termed headcount reductions. This is Jim Hightower saying, in word and in tone, Rupert Murdoch is boiling the journalism out of the once proud news pages of the Journal, reducing the paper's proper name to Wall Street's Journal.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Organizing America 3 hours each night. The Rick Smith Show.
I think the people of Wisconsin got fooled. That isn't for sure. Tanya from Mechanicsburg writes me, Rick, before your program airs, check on Governor Walker's last attempt to union bust a couple years ago when he was mayor of Milwaukee, citing a quote-unquote budget crisis in that instance as well, which was substantially debunked. He arbitrarily fired his union security force there in Milwaukee and hired Wackenhut, the same outfit that was photographed in the Middle East having those disgusting orgies about a year ago. But he hired these people to guard the courthouse and two other office buildings in the city. The chief of Wapking Hut's guards was hired by Walker, so found to have a criminal record and done a little jail time. But long story short, turns out that, you know, not only did he overstate the savings, because he thought, you know, we're going to save $330,000 a year, but in the long run, ended up costing him almost $500,000 because, oh, gee, the workers had a contract. And he had to rehire them with back pay. And the Wacken Hut people, he had to send them packing. So you look at what's going on. The reality is you would have thought that he would have learned his lesson. But I guess ideology never dies, especially when someone else is picking up the tab. So you look at the report by Think Progress, who writes, the last time Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker went to the public sector unions to take away their rights, it had disastrous results for him and the taxpayers, just what Tanya was talking about. As Milwaukee County executive in 2009, he tried to get rid of unionized security guards at the courthouse and replace them with contractors. Of course, he said it was going to save some money. The county board rejected the idea, but in March of 10, Walker unilaterally ordered it, claiming there was a budget emergency. Walker hired the British security contractor Wacken Hut of Kabul embassy sex scandal fame, just what Tanya pointed out, to replace the guards. Unfortunately for Walker and Milwaukee taxpayers, an arbitrator later ruled that Walker had overstepped his authority. Gee, that sounds kind of familiar. And he ordered the county to reinstate the unionized workers with back wages and pay tens of thousands of dollars in arbiter fees. So, again, you know, it's this idea that it's this ideology, it's this blind, and in this case, really, honestly, and truthfully, blind faith that he could get away with it. I mean, do you, really, honestly, and truthfully, Jake, do you really think that he was going to be able to, or do you think he thought he was going to get away with this without anybody noticing?
No, but I think that he does believe that, at least initially, that he could get away with it. I think given the political circumstances and given the fact that now he has bigger and better backing from the moneyed interest, do I believe he thinks he can win? Yeah, I do believe he thinks he can win. Whether he does is another question. And my take on it, Rick, is the longer it goes, I think the better chance the workers have.
Yeah. Well, the thing is this is the GOP playbook. You look at Mitch Daniels, governor of Indiana, a Republican. He's already taken the right away from public employees to collective bargaining back in 2005. What he is, you know, while this is nuts, it's for him, it's about going after the financial backing of his opponent. It's about crushing their opponent. He says the problem comes from the, you know, unions. Here's what happened. Someone asked him, said, you know, explain to me, and this is what I'd like Scott Walker to do, explain to me exactly how stealing the rights from these people is going to save you money. Explain exactly, because I think people need to understand what that means. How is he going to save the state money? What does it mean? And do you have this thought out? And someone asked this, how are you going to save this money? How is it going to benefit us? And Daniel said the problem comes from the, you know, forced exploitation, expropriation, whether they like it or not, of money started with the taxpayers, from the salaries of government workers circulated back into the political machine. That's the most powerful one out there. So he stammers and stumbles and falls all over himself trying to find an answer. And at the end of it, what he's really trying to do is destroy a political opponent at the cost of the working people. So basically, you know, in a very Machiavellian way, taking these people out in the public and gutting them in public for all the world to see so he could say, look, I am the great union slayer. I have come, I have conquered. The problem is, look, these are folks who've got families. These are folks who, like the one teacher we met, has worked his entire life to become a teacher in this city, to stay home. I mean, really, is this the kind of stuff? that we really want to talk about? Because they don't have the ability to explain. They don't have the ability to articulate why they want to steal these rights. They just don't. They don't understand the issue. All they understand is the hatred. All they get is the ideology. Unions are bad. Free markets are good. That's it. It's that simple for them. And you see folks marching up and down the streets in this city. They get it on a visceral level. Their membership, their collective bargaining rights, that's how they save their household. That's how they've worked into the middle class. They don't make huge money. They're not living high off the hog. They're not sipping martinis on their yacht, paying 15% interest off their dividends. No, they're getting up every day, punching a clock every day, working for the city, for the state, for the county, whatever, working their behinds off for a paycheck every week so that they can support their families. And this guy wants to take that away and go back to the good old days. And I think it's just plain wrong, man. Just plain wrong.
You know, you mentioned one thing, and I think it bears repeating here. We got a press release the other day from three representatives on the Hill, and they mentioned what you had mentioned, the adverse effect to the forest industry. And I didn't realize how big it was. According to this press release, it creates about $20.5 billion worth of forest industry products, 300,000 jobs, because it would affect the certification project of process within the Forest Stewardship Council. It could put a real damper in the products, in the profits, and put a real damper on the income of this state. They don't even mention that. They don't even mention that. And these are the kind of things that the public needs to know. The national press, I mean, hasn't even sniffed this story. And he hasn't allowed it. You got to give him credit. I mean, he's kept, when he speaks, he's focused on his message, and that is that the state's broke and we take jobs away.
And who do they charge? Who do they choose to cut from? That's the, you know, these are the family values people. Remember this, the Republicans are the party of family values. So who do they charge and decide to go after? I go back to when Bush was president. Every year, every budget he ever proposed, he proposed cutting the community supplemental food program. Every year he was going to cut that. To me, that's his family values. Basically, the heck with you, Granny. Sorry, we can't afford to give you a bag of groceries every month to make sure that you don't have to eat cat food. Same thing here. Sorry, we're not willing to allow you to collectively bargain. Sorry, you're not going to have any rights on the job. Sorry, you're going to have no security. Sorry, you and your family don't deserve these things because we need to run government like a business, which means we need to attack you at every point, which means we need to shrink you at every point, which means we need to go after cutting you out. That's how business is run. Is that how we want to run our government? Because that's where we're going.
You know, that philosophy even goes into Social Security as much as it's been the third rail, and it has. It's been pretty much a hands-on since the 30s, but it comes down at the end of the day that's the signature program. It's the one remnant of FDR, and he would just love to eviscerate it and take it off the American stage because they absolutely hate it simply because it goes against their political ideology of privatization.
Again, what's happened in here in Indiana has been exported. You look at Indiana, they were going down the road to right-to-work state status. The Republicans were all lined up, ready to go. And the governor said, you know what? Maybe they should drop the anti-union bill. Maybe they should drop it. Save it for another time. Now is not the right time. I'm telling you, it's a victory here. These folks here in Wisconsin have already won, but they've won for the people of Indiana, and they're winning for the people of Pennsylvania. And we got to pay attention to this. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Kevin Gibbons. He's one of the teaching assistants, one of the TAs who were the first to begin this process, to take to the streets. They were one of the first groups, and they're the ones who are organizing this. And we're going to find out their story after this. Stick around. This is the Rick Smith Show. where working people come to talk.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
I'm David Thillman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. Chances are you may never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, inspecting an elevator, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org.
On July 5, 1935, the National Labor Relations Act was signed into law. It is also known as the Wagner Act after its chief sponsor, New York Senator Robert Wagner. Prior to its passage, Senator Wagner chaired the National Labor Board, created by Franklin Roosevelt in 1933 to attempt to bring order to labor-management relations. The National Labor Board consisted of three representatives from labor and three from industry, with Wagner as the chairman. It was here that Senator Wagner realized government assistance was required to level the playing field if labor unions were to effectively bargain with management. President Roosevelt said of the National Labor Relations Act, "It should serve as an important step toward the achievement of just labor relations." Act was signed into law. Workers were encouraged and protected to exercise their newly recognized rights to freedom of association, self-organization, and engage in concerted activities for the purpose of collectively bargaining through a representative of their own choosing in order to establish wages, hours, and conditions. Employer interference, such as threats and intimidation, firing, refusing to negotiate with the union, and discrimination for union activity were expressly prohibited. These illegal activities are described as unfair labor practices by the law. The impact of the Wagner Act on American life was substantial. The standard of living for American workers, their families, and communities was extraordinary. Unionization rates increased to a high of 35% of the American workforce as American workers demanded their rights. Working men and women finally had a unified voice to stand up and fight for dignity, respect, and safety in their workplace. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Your proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Come on, you good workers, good news to you out there.
You know, that's always the question. You know, you look at a situation like this and, you know, are you going to be on the side of the governor who wants to steal rights away from working people? Or are you going to be on the side of the workers who are just trying to defend their little slice of the American dream? That's the big question. And again, this Saturday at the Capitol in Harrisburg, our friends at Keystone Progress are going to be holding a rally, the Rally to Save the American Dream. Mike does a great job over at Keystone Progress. I hope you'll get out there at noon to the state capitol there in Harrisburg, on the steps right out in front of State Street. It'd be great to see you out there. This whole thing, here in Madison, as I'm told, was started by teaching assistants at the University of Wisconsin here. We've got one of them here on the line, Kevin Gibbons here. Kevin, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me.
Tell me, how did this spark? How did this happen?
Well, I mean, it started with this budget repair bill that, at least for us and a bunch of other people, received a copy of it on Thursday, a week ago, a week from last Thursday, received it, and then the governor released it on Friday, and while everybody sort of running around figuring out what this actually means, if it actually entails sort of long-term cuts, we were organizing around actions, not really knowing exactly what to do or exactly what was possible. At the TAA, we organized with some undergraduates and grads to sort of march, had an afternoon march on the Monday, which is Valentine's Day, a march up the Capitol. We had about 1,000 people, and so had a rally, had some chanting. walked around, but it was all pretty small scale at that point. Then a lot more people showed up the next day. I'd say the first day was about 1,000 people. The next day, maybe 3,000, 3,500 on Tuesday, and that's when they started taking public hearings. We filled up the list for public hearings to extend it out and try to block a vote in the state Senate. And we just, for the joint finance committee, all these, and we just sort of stayed in the building that night and haven't left since.
And that, to me, was the key to all of this, is the fact that you stayed there and kept the presence felt. I got to tell you, for not knowing what to do, you guys have done an amazing job, and I think the folks back home in Pennsylvania need to hear how this all has happened, because I do believe, as we move into the summer months with the union contracts coming up for the state workers, that we may see the need for what you guys are doing here in Madison.
Yeah, I think a lot of people see our current governor, Scott Walker, as the tip of the spear of the GOP and of anti-worker legislation that's being passed through. And, you know, we're taking a stand. I think a lot of people around the country are seeing this happening and know that they're going to need to take a stand very soon, you know. So I'd express the same thing. You gotta be prepared for these things and know that it is possible. People are on our side. And once these measures are in place, people will rally around you. We didn't think, you know, what now? I could say 12 days ago, this was absolutely impossible for our union and every other union that's turning out these days. And on Saturday, we had 70,000 people marching on the Capitol. That's just in the Capitol, and then marching around the state against these things. So it is possible. It's not like Wisconsin is some radical state. You can do it in Pennsylvania. You can do it all over. People really care about these issues.
Yeah, and we're seeing that.
And it's electric.
Yeah, and we're seeing it happen. I just talked to a woman in Indiana who were the Jobs with Justice people are having a sit-in. Tomorrow they'll be back there. Their governor has said they're going to take that he would like to see the Republicans take the right-to-work legislation off the table. So I'm saying that what you guys have done here helped the folks in Indiana, at least them, and hopefully the people in Pennsylvania as well.
I hope it does. You know, I mean, I think it really strengthens us to think that we're part of something bigger, and that what we're doing is affecting people around the state. You know, it can feel pretty lonely and scary being in the situation when you're in the Capitol. You know, we're all pretty stressed, tired. You know, sleeping on marble isn't well. It's getting more comfortable to get used to it, but you know, dealing with these issues. So to feel like we're part of something bigger. It's humbling, but again, empowering when you're going through these things. And I hope everybody else who's facing these things feels that they are part of something bigger.
Yeah, I got to tell you, though, one of the nicest rally I think I've – the nicest protest I've ever been to in my entire life. And the cleanest as well.
we've actually been – first of all, we've got this amazing relationship with the police, and they brought police from all over the state. And I think it's an intimidation tactic, but in general, I think that the police have really been on our side. And you know, we're all state workers, right? We're not angry with the people that have to clean the floors and take out the trash. So recently we've been, you know, it got a little dirty as you know, we couldn't get away the cleaning crew that comes at night. So we've had people mopping, doing some vacuuming, trying to declutter and, you know, treat it like it's our home. And that's the way we've been seeing it. It's the way chants have been going. And, it's amazing what can become your home in just a couple of days.
Yeah, I was there the other night, and I was watching a bunch of college kids on their stomachs with rags, cleaning the floor with their bodies and with these rags. And I was going, you know, this is a protest. Am I missing something here? But at the end of it, you are really fighting for something very important. To me, this is ground zero. This is where the whole thing starts.
Yeah, we feel the same way. It is a little frustrating. I think the media message is starting to turn a bit more in our favor, but it is frustrating when you see how nonviolent, how just completely open and wonderful everyone has been. There weren't, you know, we had a rally for 70,000 people on Saturday, and there weren't any arrests, you know. But then the media message comes out that there were tea partiers and, you know, in general, I think deaths were between 1,000 to 2,000 tea partiers versus, you know, around 60,000 or 70,000 other sort of detractors from Governor Walker. And when you see those things in person. What you read about are these riots that are happening in Madison, Wisconsin. It's frustrating. But you just kind of keep going. And I think, you know, taking the high road is what has been our focus. We're going to stay in the building until they kill the bill. And that's what we're going to do.
You know, when we came out here, my wife told me, you know, I've been reading there's chaos. I've been reading that there's all this stuff going on. Be careful. You have bail money. And I said, well, I don't want bail money. I hope that if they put me in jail, I'm staying. But when I got here, that was not the case at all. In fact, the characterization by the mainstream media has been completely wrong, not only on the issue, but on what's going on here, because the only people I'm seeing are people like me, family men, family women with their children. It's almost been like a festival atmosphere.
It's amazing. Everybody's getting together. You know, we're advocating for these things. We're having conversations. We're chanting and walking around. And I think a lot of people want to portray it as this sort of radical student protest that's going on in ultra-liberal Madison, Wisconsin, right, to sort of marginalize what's going on versus sort of portraying it as something that shows signs of a budding movement. And that's disappointing. But that doesn't take away from the feeling of what it feels like to be here, and I think that's what we need to focus on, continue to spread the message about.
Let's talk about why it is, because, you know, I think most people who aren't here think it's about money. It's about the budget. You have a governor here who just, you know, he's just a budget hawk, and he's just trying to do what he thinks is the right thing to do. But at the end of the day, I don't believe it's about that at all. I'm curious your thought.
Our message has been pretty clear. You know, you don't turn out hundreds of thousands of people around the state because of pensions and health care. That's not, you know, nobody out there is chanting or... There are not even any signs that I see around in all these tens of thousands of people about health care. It's all about workers' rights. It's all, you know, basic human rights. It's all about, and also it's about the subversion of the democratic process. For me, those are the two main things that keep me here and that keep us here, that, you know, if you're going to do these things, then you better go through the democratic process that our society is built upon. And otherwise, we're not going to accept anti-worker legislation, because anti-union legislation is anti-worker legislation, and that's why people are out for basic rights of fair representation.
Yeah,
and it sounds trite, you know, it sounds sort of, you know, some people think it sounds leftist, but that's why people are out here, and it's hard to spin it any other way, to tell you the truth.
Well, it's constitutional, in my opinion, the right to assemble, the right to association.
Right.
Honestly, constitutionally. Let me ask you this last question I've got for you. What grabbed my attention was not another right-wing governor attempting anti-worker legislation. It wasn't that at all. It was the fact that he was bold enough to come out and say, you know, I may call out the National Guard, which took me back to the 1800s, where governors would call out their militia, would call out their guard, to shoot workers on picket lines, to bomb workers who were striking. I'm curious, as we move down the road in this whole process, do you have any fear of that?
Man, you know, I think you've been around these protests and things. Tell you the truth, I know I do not fear that at all. You've just got a bunch of puppy dogs right now here, and if you were to really, you know, start causing violence here, people are prepared. People know what's going on. People are informed about the issues, and they know what to do if people should sort of storm the building and things like that. I think he'd have himself a PR nightmare, because people are starting to report on what's actually going on around here. So, personally, at this point, I think the National Guard was a bit of a scare tactic. I think it was, it gives the impression that there are riots going on here. I don't see the National Guard as a threat. I think the National Guard themselves wouldn't be able to undertake some kind of sort of violent raid of people just sort of exercising their democratic right to demonstrate.
That's a good point. Kevin Gibbons, I appreciate your time. You guys have done fantastic work. Keep up the fight, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Solidarity. I appreciate all the help, and thanks for giving us a little time. Yeah.
All right, Kevin. Thanks so much. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this to wrap things up. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
A brand new world economy. I don't believe them. I want to
uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Amy Morton, Executive Director of CAIU, on the decision to switch to Capital Blue Cross Health Insurance.
By moving to Capital Blue Cross, we were able to achieve savings that we had never expected. We're getting quality care and tremendous customer service. As both a consumer of health care and as the director of this agency, I couldn't be happier that we switched to Capital Blue Cross.
To learn more, call 1-800-976-2242 or visit capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, independent licensee of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Your working class radio experience. Where hard work, common sense, and rational thought are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
Working hard to make a left. Rich and from red. Hell is fake. Oh, he's a working class man.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Also, you can email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. Our quote of the day comes from Robert Kuttner, co-founder and co-editor at American Prospect magazine. He said, defenders of offshoring have pointed out that even if American companies produced most of their products in China, a lot of value added stays in the U.S. He points out Apple sales create jobs for workers in retail stores, warehouses, and shipping, as well as a relative handful of elite software and hardware designer jobs, not to mention corporate profits swell. But in the absence of a labor movement or higher minimum wages or other pressure for decent retailing wages, the service economy is turning into a Walmart economy where domestic service jobs that are created pay mostly lousy wages. And, you know, that is our story, folks. This idea of we can have China as the manufacturer of last resort. They're the people who are going to do all of our making of things. And we're just going to sell them. We're going to shuffle them around in warehouses. We're going to stack them neatly on shelves. We're going to have someone who's going to ring them up and put them into a bag. And somehow that's a good economy. Small business owners starting a business of you know, Jake's going to cut grass for a living, and our board app, he's going to slide tubes up and down, and me, I'm going to wash cars, and somehow we're going to just trade our services. That, folks, that creates wealth in no way whatsoever, Jake. Nothing at all.
Well, they mentioned apples from China. First of all, I wouldn't trust anything.
Well, he's talking about Apple computers.
Oh, Apple computers. Okay. Well, I'm talking about the real apples. I mean, we actually, local supermarkets now, we have apples from China. And I happen to come from an area that has a plethora of apple orchards, and I'm just scratching my head and saying, why on earth would we do that? Why would we put Americans out of work in something as simple as apples?
Amazing stuff.
And I believe my friend who bought them, she bought them in Walmart.
Yeah, well, that's your first problem.
Yes. yes.
Mac writes from Texas, let the union workers of Wisconsin know that there are Texans who support them. Please stand up for the middle class. Don't believe Texas Governor Rick Perry. Texas is a low-wage paying state with at-will employment. An employee can be fired for any reason without explanation. Support collective bargaining for all workers, Max says. And look, you know, again, we've talked about this for quite some time. This concept of, you know, CEOs, they're smart enough to have contracts. When Robert Nardelli was fired from Home Depot for doing a crummy job, he was given a $210 million soft landing. Here, oh, here, poor CEO. Here's $210 million. Maybe you can get a little extra cheese on your hamburger. Every job I've ever been fired from, somebody has slammed the door on my backside, and it probably hurt. I didn't get a nice check to leave with. I got, there's the door, get out. But the CEO class, they understand contracts. They understand what it means. It is what it is. Our buddy Mike writes us, cry havoc, let's slip the dogs of war. Good evening, Rick. Great show. One of our guys who wants the revolution to begin now so he can break out the guns. But, you know, at the end of this whole thing here, the person who uses violence here in Madison is going to be the person who loses. And I'm guaranteeing you right now, it's not going to be the kid we just talked to. It's not going to be the teacher with her child. It's not going to be the families that we've seen here. It's not going to be. It's going to be some T-twit from outside here wanting to cause and stir up trouble. That, my friends, is what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And I hope, and I think it's going to happen. These police here are smart enough. They're astute enough to know who's going to cause the trouble. And it's not the people that have been here. Not at all.
You know, I did have several people, I think we mentioned it last night, who said when they were here, the Tea Party people, they absolutely went out of their way to try to cause problems. And when they did it, they just happened to have someone near with a camera. So what does that tell you? And they were well-financed, came here in buses. It was almost like the health debate all over. Different issue, same people. Same vested interests.
Yep. Got another message from Ron who said, I only caught a piece of your mentioning the Keystone Rally on Saturday. Please post it to your Facebook page. We will get it to our Facebook page at the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. Because, you know, this Saturday noon, again, Capitol steps. Mike Morrell over at Keystone Progress is going to be leading the rally to save the American dream. And I'm telling you, everybody should be out there. There should be a great showing. I'm hoping everybody in the listening area shows up and with their signs and lets their voice be heard. Noon this Saturday, Capitol steps, there's an opportunity. So every time I hear someone complain, go to the rally. Every time I hear somebody whine about something, go to the rally. That simple. Simple stuff. Today in history, a couple of quick history things. How many people remember the name Mike Ruzzioni?
I do.
Jim Craig.
1980.
That's right. Today, back in 1980, the U.S. hockey team made Miracle on Ice. And I remember that as a kid. I was playing hockey at the time. It was a great moment. And it was a great moment for the country as well. To finally beat the... To beat the Russians.
Do you remember the famous quote at the end of the game? Do you believe in miracles?
And it was the curly-headed guy who does Monday Night Football.
And if you know anything about hockey, you know that, first of all, they call them amateurs, but in the Soviet system, they were professionals.
They were in the
That's
army.
All they did.
That's all they did in the
Now,
army.
they might have had the Mocker engineer. The only engineering they did is to decide, how many hours they wanted to train that day.
What?
That was a world-class hockey team and a bunch of college and high school stars with a great coach, by the way.
Brooks, Herb Brooks.
Beat probably the best hockey team in the world.
Not on that day.
Fairy tale stuff.
That was good stuff. Today, back in 1892, in our labor history, representatives of the Knights of Labor and the United Mine Workers met in St. Louis with 20 other organizations to plan the founding convention of the People's Party. Their objectives were to end political corruption, spread the wealth, and combat the oppression of workers' rights and farmers. You know, fast forward 118 years, 119 years, fast forward, what are we still talking about? Ending political corruption, spreading the wealth so that families can make ends meet, and combating worker oppression and farmers. You know, I mean, we've been fighting this battle all this time. We've been fighting this battle now for 119 years. At some point, I'm hoping we don't have to fight this again and again and again, but it's sadly, the kids of this generation, this is the fight. And right here in Madison, Wisconsin is where it has to happen. This is where it starts. But I'm telling you, folks, it's coming home. It's coming home with us. We are bringing the revolution back to Harrisburg, back to Carlisle, back to Shippensburg, back across the state of Pennsylvania, because we got to fight back against these extreme attacks. You know, people like Daryl Metcalf who want to abuse workers at every chance. Take away their right to collective bargaining. Take away prevailing wage laws. Take away sane project labor agreements. I mean, there isn't any, and it's politically motivated. There's no rational thought that goes behind this stuff. It's blind faith, political ideology, pure and simple. And their hatred of their opponent. That, again, is what it comes down to.
And unfortunately, they persuaded a lot of people, all you got to do is cut spending to the bone, regardless of its effects, and give tax breaks and all, and that's all you need. Tax breaks. Obviously, it hasn't worked, never will work.
Oh, come on. They created jobs. All those tax cuts, they created millions of jobs. Millions of it. In places like China. Places like India, places like Mexico, not here. Because when you give the investor class their windfall, when you hand them the brass ring, they're going to go where they can get the best return. I mean, it's basic business. I mean, it's basic human nature that you're going to seek the best return for your investment. That's just common sense. And then we give them every opportunity to take resources that could be used here at home and take it abroad by giving them even more tax breaks to do that. It doesn't make an awful lot of sense. What does make sense is investing in our infrastructure, investing in education, investing in preventative health care. But here in Wisconsin, going into Ohio, what do they want to do? They want to kill the rail projects. They don't want to move into the 21st century. They don't, you know, again, a guy last night sent me a text, sent me a Facebook message saying, hey, I'd love to come to Madison, but I don't have a car. But if it were the 1950s, I could have come on a train because that's what we used to have. And now we got a governor who hates public transportation. Anyway, thanks for listening. We will be back tomorrow night right here from Madison, Wisconsin. See you tomorrow night.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like a tide and flood beneath the lunar sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous array. Democracy is coming.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Well, they're stealing down on Wall Street and in Washington, too. You know, it makes me wonder what's a guy on Main Street to do. I've always tried to be honest, upstanding kind of guy.